Honorable members, morning, Minister, and your delegation. We are today going to receive a presentation on the BRRR and also the reflection on the analysis on the SONA, in particular on the issues that are relating to affairs, and then deal with the report around the private members bill that was discussed and decision was carried by the committee on how we must move forward. And therefore, we'll then be able to end the meeting. We welcome all of you. We have received the reports from the Home Affairs and has been circulated to members. We have gone through the reports and hope that the minister and the team of Home Affairs and related stakeholders that are involved in the portfolio of Home Affairs will run the presentation. I'm going to ask Mr. Mathonsi to run on apologies and introductions will be carried to the minister, and then we'll then go to the item that have been highlighted on the agenda. Mr. Mathonsi.
Hi, Chair. I've got an apology from Ms. Ramulobeng. She's attending the Justice Committee meeting. And then this one is a late arrival to the meeting by Ms. Tito. That's all, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Mathonsi. Can we invite the Minister to introduce the team? Minister Mzwalili.
Chairperson.
Honorable Lukhase.
Before the minister, I would like to submit the apology for Ms. Modise.
Okay, carry on, Mr. Sorry, Honorable Lukhase.
Yes, Ms. Modise won't be with us today, and I don't know for how long because she is on maternity.
Okay. Any other apology? Okay, thank you, Honorable Lukhase. We'll carry the apologies as presented. Honorable Tito arriving late. Honorable Ramulobeng attending the Justice Portfolio Committee. Honorable Modise Mza, as indicated by Honorable Lukhase on her maternity. Minister Mzwalidi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to Honorable Members. I will give this opportunity to the DG to introduce his team. Thank you. DG, can you take over, please?
Thank you, Minister. Good morning to the Minister, Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members that are in attendance. From our side, we joined by the CFO, Mr. Gordon Holambi, and there's an apology from DDG Mabuso, who's actually attending class. And then there's DDG Sigama, responsible for civics, DDG Muizi, responsible for counter-corruption and security services, the CIO, Mr. Ntlantla Mabaso, and then the acting DDG for HR, Mercy Fanyetso Molefe, and then DDG McKay, and then also from the ministry, we're joined by Mudubi, Maisela Kamduli, Mr. Makua, Mr. Sia Koza, Mr. Mozi Njokwe. That's the team from the ministry, and then from the department, just to conclude, it's the Chief Director for Strategy, Planning, and Policy. I hope I did not leave anyone behind from our team. That's the team from Home Affairs, Minister and Chairperson. Thank you.
No, thanks very much, Minister. I'm reminded, nearly forgotten, to congratulate Honorable Rose and Honorable Modise Mza on their newly born babies. Congratulations, colleagues. Let's invite the Minister to introduce the presentation, and he will delegate to the team. And I'm advised that the DG will leave the meeting to attend to another commitment at around 10 o'clock. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. The presentation, as you know, is in two parts.
Recording in progress.
The DG will take you through the report on the Department of Home Affairs, and the CEO of the Government Printing Works, Ms. Alina Fossi, will also take you thereafter through her report. I think let me give them the opportunity to do so. I'll be available together with them to answer any question that may arise. Thank you very much. DG, over to you.
Proceed, DG.
Well, thank you so much, Chairperson. I hope, Adam, you'll be able to beam the presentation on our behalf. Just waiting, Chair, for the presentation to come online.
Thank you.
Can you see it, DG?
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Adam. So the first issue, Chairperson, was really around the department providing a full report on the reopening. I'm not sure what Adam is doing now. A full report on the reopening of the refugee offices, both in PE and Cape Town, as a result of the court order, which was issued by Acting Justice De Wet. The update is that the PE RRO was reopened on the 19th of October, and the details are provided on screen. And then with regards to the Cape Town RRO, a process has started, and we are working with Public Works and Infrastructure to finalize with the landlord for the tenant installations. And we hope that by the 1st of October, the Cape Town RRO will be fully functional and will take occupation of the center. That's with regards to the first one. The second one, 6.1.2, honorable members, we were, I think the minister was asked to engage the ministers of finance regarding the cutting of funding already to a budget that was constrained. Chairperson and honorable members, I think we've reported previously that following a business case that we submitted to National Treasury, in particular to deal with the capacitation of the department, on the 28th of January 2022, National Treasury approved the submission that we made, and then an allocation. Initially, we received a preliminary allocation of 266 million for the 22-23 financial year. And that was confirmed in the allocation letter that subsequently we received is the same amount. And then it increases to 278 in the next financial year. And then in the outer year, it moves to 291 million. So we should be able to capacitate fully our civic offices with 250 new additional members, and then immigration 428, where we have all those vacancies. And we hope that in the month of March, we should be able to advertise those positions so that we're able to fill all the vacancies. That's the update with regards to 6.1.2. And then on 6.1.3, if we can move to the next one, Adam, where we committed, or we were asked to commit to a clean audit. We remain committed to achieving a clean audit outcome, and to that extent, we did develop an audit action plan, which was approved by EXCO at its meeting on the 8th of December 2021. And the CFO is leading the department in this initiative. And we currently are monitoring all the back-to-basics meetings, which are looking at the audit action plan on a monthly basis to look at whether we are making progress with regards to the interventions that have been proposed or we are working on. So that is ongoing work, and it's the same that we've shared with the team from the AG, and we'll provide the committee with progress as and when we move along, in particular when we provide the quarterly updates to the portfolio committee. And then on the next one, which is 6.1.4, where there was a request for us to ensure that the budget plans are 100, or we spend 100% of the budget. In particular, I think we were asked to ensure that the budget also is aligned to the targets that are achieved. I think the point that we wanted to make as well, in addition to what we have provided for, is that in addition to the payment of salaries, because of the nature of our work, which is more labor intensive, we probably spent at CFO about 3.46 billion on the COE, which translates to about 39% or 54% if we were to include the other allocations, which means that even though we will want to strive for that balance, the challenge remains that we are a labor intensive department, and therefore the spending on the COE will always be higher. Then on 6.1.5, it's a matter that was raised by the committee to ensure that all officials that were found to have acted in the illegal procurement of the Bite Bridge fence are held accountable. The update is that this matter is being probed by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, DPWNI, and therefore, for sure, they should be able to provide the committee with an update with regards to that matter. Similarly, with 6.1.6, where the committee asked us about a report of the Special Investigations Unit on Bite Bridge, that report has not been shared, DDG Moiti, with Counter-Corruption and Security Services as yet. And if we do get the report, for sure, Public Works should be able to share that with the committee. 6.1.7, the committee requested us to address the issue of long queues at its offices. It's a matter that we are seized with. It's a matter that we're taking quite serious. It's ongoing work that we are dealing with. And there was a proposal from the committee that we need to ensure that we introduce an appointment system. We have done that. The appointment system is being piloted already at 24 offices by the end of March. We hope that we'll be able to provide the committee with an update. It's a web-based system development linked to the National Population Register to provide an added level of security. And in the Western Cape, there's been a big uptake in terms of the appointment system in the four offices where it's been introduced, whether it's in Barak, in Paarl, and we're now looking at introducing it. I think the colleagues had indicated Paarl and Wynberg. There's been a huge uptake in those areas. KZN in Ndwendwe and Tokat, that system is operational in Gauteng, Acacia, and Barak offices. So if you look at it, Chair, we've started more with your large offices where we're experiencing a lot of pressure. And the first phase, which concludes in June, we're looking at 43 offices where the system will be rolled out. And then the second phase will be to roll it out to 120 offices by the 31st of October. And then small offices that will be left will be about 34. But we're continually ensuring that we monitor the system to ensure that the stability in the system, so that when we roll it out to all the 197 modernized offices, the system is able to ensure that when someone books for an appointment, they are able to get that service timelessly when they get to the office. That's the update on 6.1.7. On 6.2.1, I think it's similar to what I provided earlier on. The audit action plan was approved by EXCO, and it's be addressing all the findings that have been raised by the AG regarding the financial and performance reporting of the department. And of course, this will be submitted to the Portfolio Committee, Honourable Members, as part of the quarterly reports. And then the next one, 6.2.2, it's looking at the implementation of revenue collection, including the contingent liabilities. I think CFO will be able to share more light in terms of where we are. In the last report that the CFO has shared with us, we were informed that since November 2021, the Department of DERCO has been able to ensure payment of 49, including about 150 million to date. So we are making progress with regards to that area. Similarly, in the area of contingent liabilities, I think the Portfolio Committee will note that during the 2021-22 financial year, two contractual disputes, and I think there's an error there. It's with New Dawn and Velo IT. Double Ring is still not resolved. The Concord ruled in our favor. And of course, that means we've wiped out that 630 million from our contingent liability. Of course, a contingent liability remains a moving target. It will come as and when people litigate against the department. And then on 6.2.3, it's similar to the other one. The audit action plan was approved by EXCO again, and the CFO is looking at getting an external person to assist, in particular in the preparation of the annual financial statements, to ensure that there's third quality assurance. Then on 6.2.4, we are working with DPW to ensure that we do realize the establishment of our offices in the malls. I think previously we reported on the 30th of November to the portfolio committee that we're working with a number of entities to look at expanding our footprint to those malls. The Department of Public Works and Infrastructure granted us approval in terms of the GMA Act to enable the department to enter into negotiations with the owners of these malls. However, Treasury has also asked us similarly to say we also need to test the market so that we're not favoring one mall over the other. And then on 6.2.5, where the committee requested us to assess and report within 6 months on the cost and benefit of having security cameras, security services, I think this is an ongoing matter that Advocate Muyitsi is attending to. But we're looking at tapping into the criminal assets recovery account or the CARA funding for the installation of security cameras at some of our offices. But we're not just looking at that. We're also looking at how do we complement the guards that are at our offices with an alarm system, inclusive of armed response, to ensure that our assets are kept safe. So that's a matter that's ongoing. We're looking at that. And then 6.2.6, the committee urged us to work with landlords to ensure that the Barra Mall office is renovated and reopened as soon as possible. I think the portfolio committee did visit the Barra Mall office after the incidents of the 21st of July. The landlord has almost completed the repairs at the Barra Mall. Home Affairs is now looking at the internal renovations and counter installations. We hope that once that's all sorted, we should be fully functional by the 1st of April 2022. This is an expense that we are not budgeted for, but we have to look at ensuring that we continue to operate from that office. 6.2.7, I think the committee requested for an update on the issue around the contract with EOH. I think the committee will recall that we reported to the committee that EOH has since ceded the contract to IDEMIA, which is currently implementing phase one of the ABIS initiative. And then on 6.2.8, we were urged by the committee to ensure that there's enough space on contingent staff for the Mamelodi office. Again, this is work that's ongoing. I think the minister has directed us as well to start looking at additional office space in next to the mall that is in Mamelodi to ensure that we are able to address some of the issues. However, with regards to the connectivity, that has been done, including the connectivity of the Mamelodi Hospital, which is currently doing birth and death registration. We hope that it will then assist in reducing volumes for clients that visit the Mamelodi office. And then on 6.2.9, we were requested to provide an update with regards to the modernization of all offices and report on the progress in this regard in the next quarter. I suppose this links to an earlier discussion or an earlier input that I have made. I think this is ongoing work with regards to the modernization of additional offices due to the limitation of floor space in some of our offices. Our property team is working with DPW to look at the relocation of some of the offices, but linked to that, Honorable members and minister, you'll recall that there's a infrastructure built project where we are building modern offices. Some have already been concluded and are operational. Lusikisiki, we've indicated that it's operational. Daung, the one in Mokopane, and Thoyando should be coming on board, as well as modern offices that will be able to cater for our clientele instead of people standing outside our offices. And then 6.2.10 on the planning and risk committees established, I think where there's a planning and a risk committee that is fully functional, and the counter-corruption and security service are working with risk management unit to look at threats and vulnerabilities in the various aspects of the department, including offices and mobile units. And then on 6.2.11, I think the committee had noted that despite the social distancing at some of our offices, we need to monitor this in the event of increased demand. Of course, it's a matter that we took quite serious and ensure that all the office managers in the morning need to be out managing the queues. Of course, they do work with security services that's provided in some of these offices to deal with the issue around queues outside our offices. And then on 6.2.12, on the dual connectivity, this is work that's ongoing, and I think the minister will speak to the issue around the broadband infraco initiative, which aims to expand connectivity and network throughout the country, and it's a matter that we hope we'll be able to tap into that, including the CETA investment plan to ensure that we have uninterrupted networks. And they indicated to us that they've made an investment of around 500 million to ensure that we deal with some of these issues. From our side, in terms of the technology refresh of network equipment, we have started replacing routers and switches, and this is work that's ongoing as well to ensure that the system is stable and it's able to provide services without any interruption. Honorable members, again, the audit action plan was approved, but this one specifically looks at the issue of irregular expenditure. This is an ongoing matter. And then 6.2.14 on disciplinary cases to be pursued, all to warrant further criminal investigation, have been referred to the South African Police Services, including some aspects of the EOH report that has been referred to the Hawks. We're still waiting for an update with regards to how far they've gone on that matter. And then 6.2.15, we were requested to ensure that we continue with the registration of births at all our health facilities. The update that we can provide to the committee is that almost 165 of these health facilities are able to issue on the spot birth registrations, which is a good progress. And of course, we'll want to upscale this to the 1,445 facilities, which will take a bit of time because we really need to invest in this specific area. I think it's an initiative that members would have seen the DM launching at Raima Musa sometimes last week. And it is really improving in terms of ensuring that people that need to register their birth, and we hope Honorable Modise and Honorable Ross will be able to register their newborns within the legal limit of 30 days. And congratulations. And then on the 6.2.16, where the department were expected to ensure that the transfer, this relates to the transferring of required staff and budget to the BMA. You'll recall, Chair, that we reported previously that for the financial year, there was an allocation of 120 that's been provided to the BMA, and the Minister of Public Service and Administration has approved the interim structure for the BMA. In the next few weeks, the Commissioner is online. Will be able to speak to the process of the acquisition process to bring on board the border guards as the first priority in terms of their recruitment process for the BMA. So we're making a lot of progress with regards to the BMA. And then 6.2.17 on the redevelopment of the six ports of entry. I think we're making a lot of progress in this area as well. We are working with the Presidential Infrastructure Project. This project has been registered as a priority project. And of course, once we have finalized working with the other stakeholders, the request for proposals, we should be going to the market soon to ensure that we start finalizing the bidding process. Of course, this is subject to processes at the National Treasury. So that's the last one, Minister and Chairperson. In terms of the Department of Home Affairs, I think the next section deals with the government printing works. I hope, Chairperson, you will have noted that there's matters for the IEC. I think the IEC colleagues are also online. Thank you so much, Chairperson and Minister. Thank you.
Thanks very much, TG, for the presentation. I will suggest we invite Government Printing Works to go through the report, and then we will then interface with the issues once the presentation has been made. CEO Fosi.
Chairperson, good morning, honorable members, Minister DM, colleagues. Let me continue with the report from Government Printing Works, starting at 6.1.8, which talks to the introduction of the Security Printers Bill. Feedback in this regard is that we have actually been engaging with various stakeholders, both at national and provincial level, to ensure that there's proper consultation on the bill. I need to indicate that the legislative provisions for ring fencing of the bill will not be introduced, but we will rather choose to implement it once it has been tabled in Parliament. The issue of the master plan is an issue that has been actually presented to the Portfolio Committee before, as well as the delays which were caused by DPWI on the tender processes, which were cancelled, and we had to restart the process. And as a result, there were unnecessary delays in that regard. However, through the intervention of our minister, we approached the presidency through Infrastructure SA. Dr. Ramakgopa has been really assisting us to secure an exemption from GIAMA, which at this point has been granted, and so that we can have UBSA help us with this project to achieve it within a shorter turnaround time. And they will then serve as our implementing agent. I need to indicate that at this point in time, we've received a project plan, which indicates that the handover meeting has been moved from the 3rd of March to the 1st of April, which is, well, another delay, but this is how it is at this point in time. And they are finalizing the MOU between DBSA and DPWI just to make sure that the handover, once it's concluded, then the MOU can then regulate the relationship between us going forward. We are finalizing the project plan with DBSA alongside this process to make sure that we first check this project, which is so critical to the strategic direction of GPW. 6.1.10. We previously called this the State Security Printer Bill. SSA intervened and said State Security is their mandate. Therefore, we then reverted to Security Printers Bill, which is what is called now. They have been helping us with the classification of documents, and that document will serve as an addendum to the bill once concluded, because we're going to have a phase-in approach. We have been consulting on the bill, and just before we thought we could finalize it, the state law advisors came with the advice that we had to extend this bill to provincial departments so that it should also be tabled at the NCOP level. And this obviously prolonged the consultation process, hence it couldn't be tabled in 2019-20 financial year. The current stakeholder engagement plan shows that we should conclude the bill and be able to submit it to Parliament by the end of the next financial year. The issue of the missing CVs, again, is a follow-on discussion. We had a number of CVs for the post of CFO as well as GM operations that got lost in GPW. The Hawks were called in to investigate. due to the delays experienced with regards to receiving a report from SAPS, I will be writing to the National Commissioner to request feedback in writing so that we can conclude and close this matter. However, internally we have acted. We had two investigation reports which pointed to the wrongdoing of five officials, and disciplinary action has been taken against them so that this should be a deterrent. We've given them all their warning letters after being put through the due processes of the disciplinary process. In terms of 6.2.18, the submission of the annual reports on time, we plan to table our annual report by the required timeframe of September 2022 or the date that we shall receive from Parliament. However, we also undertake to table two sets of financial statements by the end of March 2022. As we present, AG is already on board. They've started engaging GPW just to make sure that we are assisted to table documents timelessly. In terms of the loss of financial data, I need to report that we've got the ministerial review panel that has been established to actually delve deeper into the causes of our system failures and subsequent data loss. As soon as the report is tabled to GPW, we shall make sure that those who are held responsible and accountable are brought to the book. We have a drive to make sure that we address all the outstanding audit findings from the previous years and the year that has passed. As part of 6.2.19, we have two processes of dealing with this. I need to indicate that we have an audit matrix which has been developed and is presented at every expo, which is sitting every Thursday. So all the managers know that they need to reduce all their findings to zero. At this point, over 70% of the audit findings have been resolved, and we hope to finalize all of them by the end of the financial year. We've introduced the Internal Controls Committee, which is now chaired by a finance CFO, and they also make sure that all the internal controls deficiencies are actually addressed to make sure that we move towards a clean audit status as GPW. We have actually managed, in terms of 6.2.20, to submit the AFSs for 1920, and they've already been tabled to Parliament. The relationship with Labour 6.2.21 is a continuing journey. We have put together a plan to make sure that we engage Labour much more. DBC meetings are standing, and they should be meeting. GMHR is actually the chairperson of that. No, it's part of that, and they all meet on a monthly basis. And at EXCO, we do discuss the agenda for that meeting as well as the feedback so that we can give direction. Bilateral meetings are also held internally. EXCO has held various consultations with them when we were reviewing the structure. At this point, we need to indicate that PSA is contemplating to go on a strike because they want salary increases for all GPW officials. We have explained in various forums that salary increases are not a mandate of either the Minister of Home Affairs nor that of CEO of Government Printing Works. And we've held, shortly after my appointment, we had staff engagement sessions with the rest of the staff in GPW between August and October, just to explain, amongst others, this project. And to explain that benchmarking does not mean salary increase. It means you're comparing your salary structures with those of other entities. And as a result, you can then take a decision based on that to recommend to the relevant structures whether you deserve salary increases or not, based on that and based on the coffers. So we did explain all that to them, but the reality is that at this point, they have submitted picketing rules to us. We are in the process of finalizing that process with them, and they intend to indeed proceed with the picketing in this regard. So we will. It's a developing issue that we will keep on monitoring. In terms of the issue of amplifying our engagements with Public Works, I think it's a project that I've already reported on, so it would be a repetition if I were to continue on that. The HR resources in terms of IT, I need to indicate that at this point we are on a drive to fill all the critical vacancies within ICT. To date, we've already shortlisted and we're going to be interviewing three critical positions at the deputy director level, the senior database administrator, SharePoint administrator, as well as the special system admin virtual infrastructure. This is one area where Home Affairs came through for us and borrowed us a resource, thanks to Gigi. And then we will be able to then fill that post and release that resource, because it is a critical area. And we are engaging CETA, particularly to source the ERP system, as well as to get any technical support. We also met with CSIR so that they can help us with the PMO capacity and capability so that we can beef up our ICT environment in view of the fact that it is a vulnerable environment. So we are on a drive to assist, to be assisted by those entities in that regard. The issue of the consequence management, it's a journey again that we have started, difficult as it may be, but any act of misconduct in GPW, we institute consequence management and make sure that there's no repetition of some of these acts which are not actually desirable within the organization. On the report of the ministerial task team, it's a matter that I guess the minister will talk to. However, we are aware that the review panel has started its work and they will be submitting a report to minister. Once it's actually submitted, we shall be implementing the recommendation. The issue of reporting by the end of December on the progress made on the key financial data, 6.2.26, I need to indicate that it's still underway. And a report shall be presented as soon as we're done. We've got two project plans. One is looking at the historical data capturing, meaning that the data since November 2019 to January 2021, we just thought we can't leave data to disappear into a dark hole as a government entity and not find the reasons why, and also begin to rebuild. We've got the archives and we went into our own files and we started rebuilding the data ourselves using the source documents that are there. The second plan is forward-looking so that we salvage the current year, and we are actually capturing that data since February to date. So those processes are on board. We have additional resources from outside and we squeeze resources internally to make sure that those additional resources assist us to capture this information accordingly. The 6.2.27, we have revised the structure. And I need to indicate clearly that the Minister of GPSA has already concurred with our structure. We're finalizing it for final minister's approval, as well as a list of critical posts. So each and every GM to date has submitted their list of critical posts, and we plan to fill them over the MGF cycle so that all the critical posts in GPW can be filled. Chair, if you allow me, I just want to go back to the issue of ICT. And indicate that we had experienced a crash of our website, what we call the public server, which is called DMZ, had actually crashed. There was a specialized battery that affected the hard disk drive, and they actually crashed. It was part of our old infrastructures that have been there. And I need to indicate that we are already having a service provider that has been helping us to restore the network as we speak today. The website is up, particularly on the Gazette. So we adopted an incremental approach in view of the fact that in the past 2 weeks, we got the entire website up and then it crashed again. So we thought, let us incrementally do it and start with the critical areas. So the one for the Gazette, all of them actually is up this morning. And we're beginning to upload all the information. The critical issue to note is that we didn't lose any data. So all the data had been backed up and we will restore it back. Most of it is already there, but ICT is helping with operations and production just to make sure that the information that was not visible to the public eye is visible. I also need to indicate that during the time when the website was down, we never stopped delivering services to our customers. We actually wrote to individual customers, consulted with them, we called them just to make sure that they are aware that their Gazette shall still be emailed to them. And then they were emailed and they received their services just to ensure business continuity whilst we were sorting out our website matters. Chair, I think that's how I'm going to leave it. And then I'll take questions as they arise. Thank you very much. And I have a team of members shared before I conclude from GPW that perhaps I should also recognize. I should have done that at the beginning. My apologies. I've got the CFO, Mr. Ian van der Merwe, who is here. I've got Mr. Sihle Ngubane, who's also on the platform, acting GM operations. And then I've got the ICT team, Luke Kanya, as well as Tamara. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, CEO. Mr. Matons, I see here that the IEC and the DG did indicate. I know that the IEC has to present the recommendation and also the report of the local government election at one. Can I establish, Mr. Matons, if they are here or how are we going to deal with this matter of IEC?
Chairperson, like I indicated last week, the IEC, they said with the report of the local government elections, they are not yet ready to table it. They are still busy with it. So I suggest that we leave them out on the BRRR so that when they come for the LGE reporting, then they will have to do as well the BRRR recommendations, Chair. Right. They are not here at the meeting at the moment.
Okay, but their report is included here.
Yeah, it's included. Like I was saying last week, when they indicated that the LGE report is not yet ready. So I think it would be better if we do it together. When they do it, the BRRR as well as the other one, this LGE report.
No, I understand that framework. I'm saying the department has included the report here.
Okay. I know they included the report, but the IEC, they are not here, Chair.
Okay. What we must do in future, the advice must tally with the process because this report could not be included in this meeting because the IEC is not here. We could have received department and government printing works. I'm just assisting so that we don't mix issues when we take advices and later on the same matter come to the committee and we're expected to interface with it. Thank you. Members, this is a report presented by the department and then the Government Printing Works, CEO and also her team. They will interface with that. We're going to invite members to interact with the report, and after that we'll then request the DG to respond, invite CEO Fosi to respond and her team, and request Deputy Minister Njabulo Nzunza to comment and the Minister also to comment on this report. I'm going to invite Honorable Pillay, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Ross, Co-Chair van der Merwe, Honorable Tito, if she has already joined us, and Honorable Tswako, if he's in the meeting, and Honorable Lukhwase. Those are members in attendance. You'll advise if Veteran Lukota is also joined. In that order,
thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me also congratulate Honorable Ruiz and Honorable Modise on the bouncing babies. Chairperson, I want to appreciate and welcome the report that was presented to us this morning. And I think the first one that I want to raise, and I appreciate the CEO having mentioned, because this was really a burning issue for me this morning. You know, came to our attention that the website or system had crashed in terms of GPW website. And I'm glad to hear that while that may have happened, that they had still been able to have access to the e-gazette, in particular being able to email that. And so it did not create any disadvantage to end users who needed to be able to have access to it. But Chair, I think it's important if the CEO will be able to appraise us in terms of some of the mitigating factors, in particular around risk management. I must also highlight, Chairperson, that recently there has been quite a number of attacks on different systems in other departments and websites around cyber attack in particular. And I'm not saying that this was cyber attack, but perhaps the CEO can appraise us or take us into confidence about what is the plan in terms of how the department intends to prevent such from happening in the future. Chair, I also want to then pick up on DHA in terms of the smart offices and modernization of offices. I think in particular the DG did report on this or mentioned it very briefly. However, I just think that it was more narrative. And what I'd like to appreciate is if DHA is able to give us targets in terms of numbers and figures, in terms of updating us on the number of offices that we have managed to achieve to convert to smart offices or modernize them, and also the number of offices that we intend short-term, medium-term, and long-term in terms of being able to convert them. Chairperson, I think I've also previously suggested the partnership between municipalities, other government departments, and Chisong centres. And I think we also, you know, quite clearly mentioned the feasibility of malls. And I know that there was a pilot, and there's some offices that have been established within malls. And I think if we can be able to expand on that and look at the possibility of how we take that over. The other thing is looking at park homes as a feasibility. And I'm saying feasibility because it may not work in all areas. Chair, then just two more things. One is, will the DHA form part of the stakeholders that are being consulted to benefit from the broadband infrastructure upgrades that have been promised for municipalities in the SONA? And the last one is on GPW. When is it planned to introduce the GPW security printing bill? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Pile, for your contributions. Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to the Minister, the DM colleagues, and the representatives from the Department of Home Affairs and GPW. Chairperson, I'd also like to congratulate Honorable Rose and Honorable Modise on the arrival of their daughters. However, I'm also having just a few questions to the Department of Home Affairs. I think when they were doing their presentation, they've indicated, I think somewhere on 6.1.2, that they're going to advertise some posts that are going to cover both civic services and immigration, and those posts are going to be finalized by the end of March. The question that I have is that, does those posts going to accommodate the 10,000 interns that were mentioned by the president during SONA, I think the minister as well, that they're going to hire 10,000 interns that are going to digitize the documentation? The second question that I have to the Department of Home Affairs is with regards to the appointment system. We are aware that the appointment system has been piloted to 24 offices, and the DG has indicated that it has been piloted to bigger offices. But what I'd like to find out is the result. That this appointment system, is it giving us the desired results? Are we seeing any improvement in terms of managing the long queues? Because I've also noted in the presentation that they spoke to designated queues for various services. I know a lot of Home Affairs, they do have those queues. If you come in for collections, you just have your own queue. But are those interventions yielding any results? The question that I have to the Department of GPW. CEO has mentioned that a disciplinary action has been taken against the officials with regard to the matter of lost or missing CVs. What I'd like to know is that, is the department going to criminally charge these individuals as well? Secondly, the issue of the website crash. We have written a letter to the Minister of Home Affairs with regards to this, because we're getting a lot and lots of complaints about members of the community not being able to access the website. What we appreciate the explanation that has been given to us by the CEO. However, I'd like to indicate that in future, should they encounter such challenges, could they also just make sure that they bring these matters to our attention to enable us to be able to respond to members of the communities who are actually inquiring? Lastly, I'd also like to find out from the minister if he is still going to respond to my letter, respond in writing. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kanyile, for your contributions. Honorable Mulekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also start by appreciating the presentation as being presented by the Department of Home Affairs and Government Printing Works. Chairperson, we also want to acknowledge the fact that the department has highlighted that there is a challenge of a budget cut for the department by the National Treasury. We also appreciate the fact that there are steps being taken to engage the National Treasury on this matter. We hope that the National Treasury will respond positively so that there should not be any program that is being negatively affected. The second one, Chairperson, I just want to check, especially on the issue of development, that I didn't see anything from the presentation on the youth development. I just want to check if there is any program that intends to empower the youth. For an example, the internship, if yes, how far is the department in this regard? On the issue of government printing works, I also want to acknowledge the fact that there is a progress registered with regard to dealing with the animosity that occurred between the management and the organized labor. We hope that in future, as a portfolio committee, will be able to receive a progress report in this regard. We welcome the report and also hope that the portfolio committee will receive progress report on outstanding matters, for an example, the disciplinary matters from the government printing works and the Department of Home Affairs. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mulekwa, for your contributions. Honorable Rose, you must take the advice from the DG that this period of registration of the newborn, you will also assist us in that oversight. Honorable Rose?
Well, Chair, yeah, we'll talk about that now. So, thank you, Chair. My voice is a bit, my throat is a bit sore, so apologize if I splutter from time to time. Thank you, Chair, and to the Minister, DG, and the CEO of GPW for the presentations. And allow me to congratulate Honorable Madise on her daughter. They say that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And in SONA, we saw the ANC copying the policies of the DA. And now we have a daughter, and the ANC has a daughter a few days later. So it's really, really impressive, Chairperson. From a DHA view, my first comment is on the refugee reception centres, and it's hard to understand how they remain closed, because our understanding from last week was that the staff are back at Home Affairs, and it really that this creates a massive problem because you have, refugees do not stop coming in because there's a pandemic, and what you have now is a situation where they seem to be able to do something online, and there's a lot of online this and online that. It's not accessible to everybody. And so you create a situation, you create this massive backlog. And I really need to understand why these all remain closed when at the very least they should be partially opened. Because it's, the only thing that one can think of is that the real reason to keep them closed is to give you a chance to catch up with the backlog. So I think it's really urgent that those centres start to open up in some form or another. The other issue, Chairperson, is if all the staff are back, why is citizenship by naturalisation not open? I mean, it's amazing that citizenship services are open. All of them are open. We have persons that have applied for citizenship via naturalisation, and it's been approved in principle, and now they need to wait till kingdom come for us to go to level zero before that can be rubber stamped. And so I'd just like to have an explanation on this. What is the science behind this? What is the reason behind this? Because there can't be tens of thousands of these people that are going to flood the Home Affairs offices. I mean, there should be something that can even be handled administratively, that you're literally finishing the process. Then the DHA, you know, indicated they will include the audit action plan progress in the quarterly reports. So I just want to understand why these were not included in last week's quarterly report that we received to the committee, because we received three quarterly reports. And I didn't see the audit action plan progress in either of them. But that being the case, if we can please at this point just get feedback on what are the highlights of some of the successes and the progress against the audit action plan. Then in terms of contingent liabilities, it's really good to see that the bigger claims are being dealt with. But most of these smaller claims, Chair, that really add up are really based on simple things. It's officials that fail to deliver on time and communicate with a client. And it forces these clients to go and take Home Affairs to court to get something that they should be able to get through a natural process. And so my question here is, you know, which specific workflows have been identified by looking at all these claims and how, what processes have been optimized at Home Affairs to stop these repeat claims? Because it creates great business for litigators that, you know, it's like shooting a fish in a barrel, because clearly the department is wrong. They go to court and they get the judgment against the department with costs. Then, Chair, in according to 6.2.14, you know, it talks about all cases reported to the branch that warrant further criminal investigation are referred to SAPS. How many exactly have been referred in this last financial year that we are in now? And as much as you respond to reported cases, I think we need to understand what mechanisms do you have in place to proactively tackle corruption? Because if you're going to wait for someone to report it, you know, people get intimidated. Even once they do report things, as we've seen in this committee, people withdraw what they stated out of fear for their safety. So what mechanisms do you have in place to proactively tackle corruption and not wait for it to be reported to you? Then I thank DG McCordy for the well wishes. And I did manage to go and try and register at a health facility. The challenge there was, you know, I did that a couple of years ago. I have an older son. And the last time I went there, I managed to do it very quickly. They had a printer there and I got the birth certificate immediately, which was quite incredible. Fast forward to yesterday, there was no printer in the office. And the staff member didn't seem to know that I, as the father, could register the child. So, you know, she was a very nice lady, very professional. And she was very upset when she later found out, and we confirmed that I, as the father, you know, married father, can do that. So I think, you know, training is a bit of a concern here. And I've certainly seen it, you know, I think Honorable Kanyile said how many queries we deal with as DAMPs. And often we found that officials, they didn't get the directive that was issued, or they didn't see the regulation. And what this person said is that she's chased away so many fathers, and she actually feels terrible about this. And so DG, I'd really like to urge you. I think perhaps there's a mechanism where there's some communication that goes to an office or an office manager. I don't know if it gets through to everybody. And I just encourage you to really look at that, because I think, you know, this was a very professional person that you had there. And she felt just terrible about, you know, when we confirmed that this is indeed the case.
Okay.
Then in terms of GPW, I'm wrapping up. I think, Chair, that, you know, I don't think we really take seriously the lack of governance at GPW. And we're talking about the security printing bill now. And we're talking about consolidating all security printing at Government Printing Works. And I've been through it before. I'm not going to give the list of everything that hasn't happened, annual reports, et cetera, exam papers leaking. You know, the what I don't see in the report that we have here is we asked the minister to hold the acting CEO to account. So what has happened on this? I mean, we can't just say that some officials got a rap over the knuckles or they got a letter. How was the acting CEO held to account as the committee requested? and what capacitation program is in place? Because there's a clear problem. I mean, it's alarming when even if it was a disc that failed, there should be a backup. It's in any organization will have that basic thing in place. So we need to understand that. It goes down quite often. This is not the first time it's been down for a number of weeks. So my question in this regard is this hosted by a service provider? And what is the approximate annual value of that contract? And is there some sort of an SLA where they need to keep the site up? And what are the details of that SLA? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ross, for your contributions. Honorable Van der Merwe.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to the colleagues, greetings to our Minister, our Deputy Minister, our DG and the CEO of Government Printing Works. And yes, let me also then congratulate our two colleagues on extending their families. Really, we want to say congratulations as well. I want to start, Chairperson, I think we need to thank the DG for the comprehensive report, and we'll include the audit action plan and in the quarterly reports going forward. And yes, we didn't have one in the last report, so hopefully that, as the Honourable Roos had mentioned, would be able to be forwarded to us soonest. And I think then also with the Government Printing Works, I think possibly they could do the same, because the CEO spoke about the fact that they now have a post-audit action plan and matrix in place, and that they will be presenting it in our next meeting. But I think going forward, it would also be helpful if we could get on a quarterly basis their audit action plan reports, so that we can play our oversight role in that regard. And similar to that, adding to that, I think we need to get a consequence management report. We heard it's a work in progress, but possibly we need to see, without further delay, a report on the consequence management and disciplinary action that they've taken against individuals so far, because I agree, from the presentation, it doesn't seem like much is happening in terms of people that have made serious transgressions. So I think that is very important. There is a mention about the Hawks investigating. I wanted to know from the CEO whether they've indicated any timeframes in terms of when they'll be finalizing their investigation. And then I welcome the focus on filling the critical IT vacancies. But again, I would like to ask the CEO if she could give us some timeframes by when these will be filled. I'm also quite worried about the refugee centres, which the Honourable Roos spoke to. I really don't understand that they would still be, the Cape Town one in particular, would still take such a long time to be reopened in October. That's really far off, and I really don't understand what happens in the interim with people who are within Cape Town needing to do an application. And that really worries me, because it does seem like you are using this time to catch up on the backlog. I think our report does speak to the issue of Baitbridge, and as much as we're saying in this report that the investigation of public works is an ongoing issue, and that a lot of work is being done in terms of the Border Management Authority chairperson, and the fact of the matter remains that Baitbridge is really a big concern. It really should keep us all up at night. Last night, we all watched a breaking news story of some people who had attacked our police force, and unfortunately 20 of those people were from Zimbabwe. So really my concern in this report is we say that GPW is conducting an investigation, which is fine. We're saying we are moving in terms of establishing the BMA, but we don't have a border control yet. BMA is not fully functional or operational. So really I wonder, in the interim, what is it that we're doing to ensure that Baitbridge is less of a disaster, if I can put it like that? Because if you engage Zimbabweans who are crossing the border, DG, they tell you that they pass through daily without passports. It's simply a case of paying a certain amount of money. You don't really need a passport. In fact, as I've said before, it's preferred that you do not have a passport because then you have to pay a certain amount of money. Then with regards to the designated queues, I'm wondering whether these designated queues are being rolled out at all offices, because, for example, I recently visited Balvon and Barrick, and there aren't designated queues. And finally, with regards to the online appointment system, Honourable Kanyile did mention it, but I think it will be helpful going forward if we could get a report to say, for example, that at the Balvel office, if you do a passport renewal, it will take you 4, 5, 6 hours, but now with the online appointment system, it takes 30 minutes, for example, so that we can see those successes. And that would really be helpful going forward. Thank you very much, Chairperson, I'll leave it there.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van der Merwe, for your contributions. Honourable Tito.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings to everyone who is present today. I would also like to congratulate Honourable Modise and Honourable Ross on their new arrivals. Chair, I'm just going to ask two questions on the IEC. And number one is going to be, what has been done with the business case analysis showing that the IEC should buy a new headquarters rather than rent? And the second one is, in terms of 6.2.29, what are the details of the budget requested from National Treasury by the IEC for the retention and employment of critical permanent staff? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Tito. The IEC did not present. Yeah, and I think we noted your apology for arriving a bit late. We'll hold that question. Mr. Matonsi, note that question. We'll raise it when the IEC is going to present in our next session. Apology, Honourable Tito, for not recapping on the advice and the request from the IEC that they'll present the BRRR recommendation report and also the local government elections. So I'm just raising that the IEC are not in the meeting and the report has not been presented. But if you have any other question also, we can come back to you. Honorable Lukwasa, Honorable Tswago. Honorable Lukwasa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Most of my questions have been covered, but on what Honorable Kanyile has already said, an additional question would be, does the allocation of the 10,000 interns mentioned by the President at SONA included in the additional 266 million that is allocated by National Treasury for the cost of employment? And also, Chair, the DG mentioned or indicated that the audit action plan will be included in the quarterly report. One may ask that why is it that the audit action plan was not included in the quarterly report that we received last week, Chair? And also on the Department of Home Affairs, I would like to know what is being done by the staff that is appointed at these refugee centers until the official opening. To the GPW, I heard Honorable Molekwa made mention of a disciplinary action report. One would have an interest, especially that we've been sitting down with GPW for so many times. One would like to know if they have a disciplinary action report or any consequence management that they have at least undertaken in the past financial year. And I also have an interest in knowing I heard Ms. Fossey saying that the PSA is contesting the benchmarking of salaries. And she mentioned that they've received a notice of picketing. Have they ever tried to sit down and get the real facts? Why would the PSA or any trade union want to contest the benchmarking, as it might or it has a possibility of increasing their salaries? Chair, my last question would be that what is going to happen to those employees that resigned after the investigation was done on the lost CVs? Are there going to be any steps taken against them, or are they going to be left to go as they've already resigned? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can I check if Veteran Lokota has joined, or Honorable Tswako?
Natalie.
Thank you. I think what we're going to do, we're going to request the team to respond to the issues raised. Minister, just on the highlight, you recall that the committee visited, conducted oversight at Govan Printing Works. Though we appreciate the report and the improved areas that have been presented here, on the issues that are related to weak governance, including the IT and other issues that are related, which has compelled you to appoint a task team that is led by the former advisor to the former President Mbeki. Perhaps you may need to give a highlight in terms of the progress to that report. Last year, you did committed that the report will be presented by early this year. And what is the progress around that, even though it's not completed, and the implementation phases that has been identified by the report. And secondly, is that also the issue of the that had been appointed a task team led by the former Director General Lubisi. What is the progress around that? Because the task team that you have appointed, they can't stay there for long when the committee has made conducted and made recommendation and the glaring issues that have been identified. So we need to just express a report progress on the, in particular, on the two task teams, because they're critical in terms of the work that we've made observation on. We're going to then invite the CEO Fosi to deal with the response and your team that you have been delegated here. And then we then invite the DG. I'm advised that DDG McKay will take responses and also delegate. Then we'll invite the Deputy Minister and the Minister. In that order. CEO Fosi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Minister, DM, members and colleagues. I'm with my team. I'm going to take some of the questions and then they will then add where they their respective areas questions have been asked to us. Honorable Pile, thanks for the question. From a risk perspective, indeed, we have been worried by the number of crashes in our environment, and our risk assessment has actually pointed to a number of factors. One, it was the issue of the old infrastructure and outdated environmentals, meaning that our data centers, our servers, our land, we realized that GPW has been in existence since 1888, and there were a number of innovations along the way, but we found that we're still dealing with that legacy. And for us to really manage the risks, we had to come up with a risk management plan, and we have a risk register specifically focusing on ICT. We actually had a service provider for the past 3 years that has been helping us with the risks in the ICT environment due to the technical nature, so that we understand exactly what is it that needs to be done. I must say that we've made strides in addressing most of the ICT-related risks, and particularly the one on cybersecurity, you know, strengthening our firewalls, making sure that we create redundancies, making sure that there's hardware on site as well as remote backup at the CSIR. You know, we've been trying a refreshing of our tape library. So there's a number of initiatives that we put in place just to make sure that we protect our network from attacks. And we've got vulnerability reports that are presented at every expo, just to show how much we have mitigated some of those risks. So, and we continue to do such going forward. So in terms of the plans to prevent such occurrences happening in future, As EXCO, we took a decision, and there's a business technology strategy that has been developed by the acting CIO. In that one, we've taken a conscious decision to begin a technology refresh exercise. And in that, there are a number of initiatives that we have already started. Doing away with all the outdated infrastructure is one. We focus on the corporate as well as the public servers, the website being one of them, including the corporate one internally, all our databases, the LAN, increasing storage capacity, all that. We have consciously started a journey to make sure that we refresh our technology, and we already have service providers on board to actually help us to re-automate the eGazette system, to replace the servers, and we're good to go in that regard. It's been a painful exercise, but when you adopt, you inherit an organization that is as old as that, this are some of the painful exercises you need to go through. But also you realize that as you phase out some of the technology, you need to build capacity internally, and which is why we have the structure that is now approved, and we're filling the posts. We're on a drive to actually fill most of those posts. In ICT in particular, we had a history of service providers being running from applications to data centers and so forth. So we are filling those posts to make sure that we can grow our own timber, and those people can be available anytime when we need them. But the most important part has been to migrate to the latest technology and make sure that we also have the service and maintenance agreement, so that when we hit the pothole along the way, those service providers can come and immediately maintain our system. So it is important that we do that. Honorable Kanyile, the issue of the missing CVs, I've indicated that I'll be writing to the National Commissioner, and I think based on that report, we are definitely going to be taking action against those who have been found to have erred in this regard. But we're also waiting on the outcome of the review panel, a report which is going to be presented to the minister soon, and an appropriate action will be taken, even if it means charging people criminally. Because indeed, even if a person jumps whilst the investigation is underway, it doesn't exonerate you from being charged criminally. And we will pursue such people should the wrongdoing point towards them. Honorable Molekwa, indeed, we will be presenting a report on our engagements with labor as well as on the disciplinary cases. We actually have a foresight report that we present to DPSA on a monthly basis that demonstrates actions that we've taken and how long it takes us to resolve those cases. We've put a turnaround time that in terms of the disciplinary code and procedure, we're supposed to finalize our cases by a particular turnaround time. And that is being enforced, and GMHR knows that we're supposed to finalize our cases timelessly to avoid protracted investigations that are never ending. Honorable Ross, the issue of discipline is obviously guided by prescripts as well as the disciplinary code and procedure and the SMS handbook. So we are indeed following due processes when we institute discipline just to avoid nasty comebacks. We avoid emotional decisions as well. We make sure that we gather all the facts, and once all that has been consolidated, we do follow due processes just to make sure that discipline is actually enforced within the organization. The issue of the security printing bill, we obviously are not adopting the take-it-all approach, but we're focusing on state security documents, and we're going to adopt a phase-in approach. Like I said, SSA has been helping us with the classification, and we will phase in the first batch. As we get our back office in order through the master plan. And once we are inside the master plan, we will then increase capacity so that we're not found wanting in that regard. So it's quite a realistic plan that we're putting in place just to make sure that we service the public properly without any challenges. Yes, in terms of the website, we had a company that has built the website as well as the e-gazette. You may have seen in the media where they actually indicated that they are no longer providing the service to us. Hence, we have adopted the tech refresh approach where we are going to make sure that GPW owns the website. And as soon as we have a challenge, we can be able to recover within the shortest possible time without waiting for the service provider to come from outside and continue to charge us. As a self-revenue generating entity, we had to take such decisions to to make sure that we minimize on spending and most of the services can be performed by those officials that we are appointing inside so that we can grow our own timber. Honorable Lizal, indeed, we will present the post-audit action plan on a quarterly basis as requested, as well as a consequence management report, basically on based on the disciplinary actions that we've taken. For the Hawks investigation, I will be writing to the National Commissioner in order to fast track, because you know those investigations have been carrying on for a while, and there's a level of impatience from our side as well to finalize these cases and conclude on them. Time frame for the filling of critical posts in the ICT environment. What delayed us was the finalization of the structure. Now that it has been approved, the critical posts have already been submitted by all the GMs and we're good to go. So from 1st April, we'll be filling the posts we'll be embarking on a recruitment drive to fill the critical posts. And the ones in ICT in particular, we hope to get the incumbents from April and May in particular so that we can stabilize that environment once and for all, and they can support the tech refresh exercise that we have in place. And I think the Honorable Khwasa on the disciplinary action report, as well as what's going to happen when the investigation is concluded, I've already responded to that. In terms of labor, on the issue of the picketing, I've actually already spoken to GMHR to say we need to embark on a further process and not accept the fact that there will be a picketing and be comfortable with that. So she was already scheduled an engagement with PSA to meet with them as the line manager. And I said immediately thereafter, then they will be called to EXCO so that we can understand the actual motive. At this point in time, they are very clear that we have no jurisdiction over salary increases. So I think it's for us to say, what is the actual motive so that we can deal with the real issues? And should that effort not succeed, I've already escalated to Minister saying that then we will report to Minister to say these are the efforts we've put in place, but they still want to continue with the benchmarking. So we will try as much as we can to sit around the table and continue to engage with them so that we avert any hostility within the organization. I'm not sure, Chair, I think I've responded to most of the questions. I'm not sure if there's anyone from GPW, Chair, through you who would like to respond or add, but I think I've covered most of the items. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, CEO Fosi. Just on the matter of the two reports of the review panel task team appointed by the minister and the investigation process you have invoked within the entity. How do you reconcile the two? Unless the minister will come and report, because it appears, unless I'm not comprehending the process, but it appears we're investigating the same matter, but two parallel processes. Maybe the minister, when he comes in, but I'm interested on how we're going to reconcile a recommendation that are arising from the reports. I'm just following up on the matter Honorable Khwasa has raised in terms of the issues that are on the table. If you want to take it up, I think you need to impress on that, and the minister will also assist to deal with that. Just on that matter. CEO Fosi.
Chair, let me respectfully allow the minister to talk to that issue when he takes the podium. Thank you.
Okay. Any member of the Government Printing Works, CEO Fosi, who want to comment? Okay, thank you. DDG McKay?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister. I will just farm out the questions that have been asked. Honorable Pillay, Mr. Sigama, if you can just deal with the issues asked by Honorable Pillay on the smart offices, the targets or the data that we have on them in terms of the establishment, our partnership with municipalities, and also the CIO, if you could deal with the issue around whether the Home Affairs is part of the stakeholders for the brand broadband rollout. DDG Sefania, Molifi Sefania, so acting DDG HR, if you could deal with the issues around the advertisement of posts and whether it will accommodate the recruitment of interns by Honorable Kanyile. And Thomas, if you could deal with the DDG Sigama, deal with the whether the appointment system is yielding the desirable results. And the CIO, if you could deal with the website crash and the reasons around the website crash and how do we avert this in future. The CFO, if you could deal with the Honorable Molekwa's question on the budget cuts, Honorable Ruiz's question on the contingent liability in terms of specific workflows that have been identified to reduce contingent liability, as well as the audit action plan, why it was not part of the quarterly report, and also to give highlights and progress on with regard to the audit action plan. DDG Muitse, if we can look at the issues around criminal investigations, how many have been referred to the SEPs and the Hawks, and how do we proactively deal with corruption? I think those are the issues that were asked by Honorable Ruiz. And Thomas, DDG Sigama, just the issue around why citizenship by naturalization is not open yet. Honorable Van der Merwe asked issues around the what are we doing in the interim whilst we are establishing the BMA. Commissioner Masiapato, if you could just respond to this, as well as to, in particular, how are we managing the northern border with Zimbabwe and at Bidebridge. And DDG Sigama, if you can deal with the issues around whether designated queues are being rolled out at all offices. I think the questions that are asked by Honorable Lekhwasi will also be responded to by the CFO with regard to related questions that were asked by Honorable Van der Merwe and Honorable Ruiz. Chairperson, allow me just to deal with the issues around the refugee centers. A question asked by Honorable Lekhwasi. We reported last week, Honorable Lekhwasi, that the staff that we have at the refugee centers currently are reporting for duty, and they are working and assisting the Refugee Appeals Authority of South Africa and the Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs to prepare files to deal with the backlogs in that particular area. They are also dealing with online renewals of refugee and asylum status, and they issue IDs and passports to those applicants that have applied for refugee IDs and refugee passports. So they are at work. With regard to the opening of the Cape Town Refugee Reception Office, Honorable Van der Merwe, you will recall that this office was closed even before lockdown. It was a court order that ordered the closure of the Cape Town Refugee Office, because the office at the time was seen as a nuisance factor by other offices, by other businesses in the same vicinity. And we were then forced to go and
Home Affairs, Department of Home Affairs, you are disrupting each other.
I've made in your report.
And Adams, you are disrupting the chair when it's calling order on the minister who is disrupting the DDG. Proceed, DDG McKay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. So the Cape Town office was closed, and we then had to go and look for other premises from which to operate from. And we needed to do due diligence in terms of, or not due diligence, make sure that the offers that we are going to get now would not be in an area where we would have other businesses that would be affected by the high numbers of refugees or asylum seekers that visit those offices. And the government public works has been in the process of getting such a site for us. They have identified one now, as the DG has reported, in Epping in Cape Town. And we are waiting for the contractual issues to be finalized by the government public works, or government public works, so that we are able to start erecting or start building, or let's say establishing the Cape Town Refugee Office. That is why it's taking us to October 2022 for that establishment. But we are reporting regularly to the designated judge dealing with this matter, Justice De Wet, in terms of we're giving him monthly reports in terms of progress on the opening of this particular refugee reception offices. We are also planning to move to the reopening of current or the other refugee reception offices, probably somewhere in May. We are still having discussions around that particular matter, but we will be opening in the next month or 2 months, should that be confirmed. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I'll hand over to my colleagues to deal with the questions as I have allocated them. Maybe to start with you, CFO, on the audit issues.
Okay, thanks. Just caution that in last week's presentation dealt with some of the issues which have been raised for responses sufficiently. I think your team may need to pick up issues that were not sufficiently dealt with, which members have raised, so that we don't spend another 2 hours on the responses. I know that in the last meeting when you were presenting your quarterly reports, there were some of the issues that were sufficiently dealt with. Just go to the specific on the issues that members have raised. Thank you. We'll move with that line. Mr. the DDG Civic.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, and Members of Parliament. I will start with the first one on the expansion of our modernized offices. Chairperson, as you are aware, the department has got 412 offices. So we started modernizing our offices since 2013, where we had about 27 offices that were planned. As we speak right now, we are sitting at 197 offices that are currently modernized. However, we experienced challenges in terms of space, wherein the remaining offices were found to be very small, where we found that they are not able to cater for our workflow processes. Then the decision was for us to then explore further and look at alternative methods that could be used to then house the life capture system. So indeed, as Honorable Pillay indicated, we started looking at the use of MOS, where we started engaging owners of those MOS, and some of them has given us space so that we can start operating in that area. Example, in Mainland, we've already viewed the space, and we are now going to move forward in terms of installing the system. We have also used the banks, as you are aware, Chairperson, and we'll continue to work with them. And once the agreements are signed, we'll then make sure that indeed we roll out to those banks, approved banks, as soon as possible. We have also procured 10 additional mobiles, which we hope to receive them by the end of this financial year. And that will also assist in expanding our footprint going forward. This is due to the fact that when you look at the brick and mortar infrastructure that we are having, most of them are very small and are not able to house our life capture system that has just been introduced. Then moving forward to the second question, Chairperson and Honorable Minister, there was a question around the appointment system, whether it is yielding results or not. Yes, I must indicate it's too early, Chairperson and Minister, to really make that assessment, but we've already distributed the system to all pilot sites. Suffice to say, most of the areas where we have been piloting, we have seen significant results. For example, in Byron, in our Acacia, although the long queues continue to really inundate us, we have seen that most of the clients are really interested in using the booking system. What we are trying to do is to make sure that we communicate and also make sure that we implement change management practices within our staff members to start familiarize themselves on the use of the pilot of this booking system that we have just introduced. So the next one was a question raised by Honorable Ruas around citizenship by naturalization. Chairperson and honorable members, indeed we have opened for naturalization and all categories of citizenship now are open. Immediately after we received the announcement to extend to adjusted alert level one, there was a circular that was issued to all offices. And indeed, citizenship is a category that has now been included in our suite of services for our branch civic services. So all clients are allowed to visit us to apply, and those that qualify will then be adjudicated, and a naturalization certificate will then be awarded to those clients who have applied. Then we also take note of what Honorable Nose Ross has indicated, say that the issue of fathers registering kids needs to be communicated. We have done that before, but we'll reiterate and make sure that with our Learning Academy colleagues, then they will have to make sure that we go back again and retrain our people, as we have got an annual training program that goes to all offices and make sure that in case there are areas where they require assistance, then our Learning Academy is ready to assist them. I think those are the questions that were sent to my side. And thanks so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Sigama. CIO?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members. Yes, Honorable Pillay. DHA will be one of the stakeholders on the broadband upgrade. So we're looking forward to consultations with those who are arranging it, as this is the most important critical success factor for Home Affairs IS information systems operation. And in relation to the website crash, Ms. Fossey has answered that this was in this happened at the GPW. But we are also checking what's happening there with interest, because what happens in one government department serves as a learning for other government departments. And we have one of our members seconded there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nhlanhla. HR.
Thank you, Chairperson. And then good morning to honorable members, the honorable minister and honorable deputy minister. The response to the question that has been asked by Honorable Kanyile, that will the post be advertised simultaneously with those that will be advertised in the department, and that should be running in March 2020, the answer is yes. However, they'll be following a different process altogether. And this is what we have presented to Minister and Deputy Minister in the project plan that we have submitted. The timelines are the same, however, different processes. The other question that was raised by Honorable Molekwa in terms of or in relation to youth development. Yes, Honorable Member, we do have a youth development program. However, we do not have a dedicated funding for it in the department. We are partnering with different sectors, the Public Service Sector Education and Training Authority, as well as the Safety and Security Sector Education and Training. So what happens here is that we apply for a discretionary grant. Once allocated, we then advertise for either internship programs or for a cadet program. But we also continue to partner and collaborate with the TVET colleges for them to, you know, assign their learners who may need experiential learning or rather exposure in terms of whatever that they might have studied. We do afford that kind of an opportunity to them, you know, to host however they will continue to pay the stipend for those learners. The last part that has been asked in relation to the funding, I will rely on the CFO to respond to it. That was talking about the funding that has been allocated through the capacitation of the department, whether that includes the 10,000, I think CFO will respond to that appropriately. Thank you so much.
Okay. Are you still on the platform, Ms. Stefanieto?
No, Chairperson, I've said thank you very much. The funding one will be responded to by the CFO. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Stefanieto, CFO.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and good morning to the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and my Honourable Members. Chairperson, if you allow me, let me start with the issue of funding of these posts. I'm glad to report, Chairperson, that National Treasury has been sympathetic to our cause and has funded our business case for capacitation, in particular in the civics, immigration, and IT environments. Chairperson, that funding is 266 mil, effective 1st of April, and that will allow us to fill about 758 posts. Chairperson, the 10,000 interns is not covered by the business case. Separate funding will be provided for that business case. My understanding is that comes through the presidency and not, and it was not part of our allocation. Chairperson, the second issue was the issue about the audit action plan and the progress made with that. The highlights of the current audit action plan, Chairperson, is that we have 184 actions. Of those 184 actions, 96 are already completed, 77 are work in progress to be completed by the end of March. So, Chairperson, I'm getting very good support and cooperation from my colleagues. There has been a dedicated resource allocated to the IT environment to support them with the audit action plan and reporting. Internal audit has also done what is called a validation of the audit action plan. In other words, they have checked whether this plan we prepared as management meets the criteria of the SMART criteria and that it's actually implementable and will address the root causes. Chairperson, the audit action plan will be shared with the portfolio committee. I can do it immediately after this meeting, but there's also an engagement with our audit committee this coming Thursday on the audit action plan. So perhaps I will wait until audit committee has also given their input on the plan before I submit this to the portfolio committee. So, Chairperson, my commitment is that the audit action plan and the report thereon will be submitted with a quarterly report going forward. Chairperson, then the last issue is just the contingent liabilities issue. Chairperson, we did report there that we won those two cases and that had a significant that resulted in a significant decrease of our contingent liabilities. In respect of the small cases, we use shooting in the barrel cases, Chairperson, we report a contingent liability when summons is issued to the department. Now, most of these applicants or most of these guys that sue the department never take the action any further than just issuing us with summons. That process to clear the contingent liability register of old cases involves us working closely with the Office of the Chief State, with the OCP, Chief Litigation Officer, the SG, sorry, Chair, I forgot the Solicitor General, as well as the offices of the various state attorneys. That process is going to be a longer term process, Chair. We will not be able to immediately clean out our contingent liability register with all the small cases where there was no action for some time. Chairperson, I thank you.
Thank you. I'm sure the minister will assist the department to deal with the issue of that was pronounced in the SONA by the president. I'm not sure whether you've accurately dealt with that matter, CFO Olambe, but thank you for the responses. On our list, Commissioner Masiapata.
Good morning, Chairperson, Minister, and other honourable members present. Chairperson, Commissioner Masiapata is attending another session today. I'm Deputy Commissioner Shilembe for Operations, and I will take over the process that he was supposed to answer on, Chairperson. Can I continue? Am I allowed, Chairperson?
No, thanks. Yes, Deputy Commissioner Chilembe, thanks very much. I did not notice that you have also joined us. You can continue, Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The question that has been raised to us is about how are we managing the Zimbabwe issue on Bait Bridge. Chairperson, we are aware of the challenges that are happening at Bait Bridge. However, we're dealing with this issue in twofold. First is the development of the BMA itself. We are going through the processes of how are we going to develop the BMA, following what the Act says in terms of Section 97 proclamation and also on the implementation protocols. The reason why I'm raising this is that, Chairperson, the plan is that after we have dealt with the two, the plan is that by the 1st April this year, all those government departments that are charged with border control will then be seated into the BMA, but on a secondment process. So from April, 1st of April, will then be fully in charge of all those government departments that are working in that environment. The second part that how do we deal with this issue currently is that we are still using the multi-party agreement process, where we are the lead agency with regards to making sure that all the government departments work together in this space. An example of this is that what we have done now during the festive season, where we were able to deal with all the issues that relates to the challenges that relates to Bait Bridge, whereby we have involved our counterpart from the Zimbabwean side in dealing with this issue with them. And also we have involved the province, the provincial office of Limpopo, dealing with the issues of the corridor, because most of the challenges that are happening at Bait Bridge are caused by those processes that what happens outside the border post and what happens out, on the other side of the border post. So we have involved all the role players, the defense were working with us, dealing with all those issues that are happening outside the perimeter of the port of entry. And we have involved the province in dealing with all the issues that are in the corridor that causes the traffic congestions, the issues of people that are being marked there by the criminals and all those issues. So that is the process that we are following. As we speak, Chairperson, yesterday we have just advertised 182 posts for the border guards that will be put there by April, and also 13 team members that will be working with the border guards, and 5 group commanders that will be in charge of those border guards. That is summarily what I can say now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Colleagues, Mr. Shabani requested to be excused for just 2 minutes and requested that Ms. Muitsi may come in. He'll be joining us very soon. He has a bit of a problem. Ms. Muitsi, and thank you, Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, and Honourable Members of the Committee. On our question, the strategy for our counter-corruption is centred around 4 pillars, which are prevention, analysis, detection, investigations, and resolution. In the prevention space, we conduct
internal, we conduct awareness for our internal and external holders. We've got security vetting where we're vetting our personnel to determine their security competence. We conduct process reviews to detect or identify loopholes within our system and processes with a view of preventing corruption. We've got investigations of reported cases. These cases, we deal with them jointly with law enforcement. We've got joint projects that we're working on with the police. And for the past financial year, we had 13 cases that were reported to the South African Police Services mainly. They were for passport photo swaps, for permits, for IDs. And in these ones, we also had joint operations where arrests were undertaken for the cases that were referred to the South African Police Services. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ms. Moisi, for that response, and Deputy Commissioner Chilembe. Thanks, Honorable Lekhwase. We're going to invite Deputy Minister to, or DDG McKay. Is there any other thing?
No, Honorable Chairperson, that's all from us as responses.
Okay. Thank you, DDG McKay and your team. Deputy Minister Njabulo Ndunza.
Now, thank you very much, Chair. Just a few issues from my side, just to enhance on some of the clarities. I think around the issue that was asked around the capacity for staff is that we'll remember that sometime last year we carried out a program which was professionalization of Home Affairs, which was part of our training to staff to make sure that we increase their capacity and their abilities. So we'll continue to do that. And the issue of the backlog project, I think we must separate them, because you will remember that there is a project that we are running to deal with the backlog on refugees, which we are running with the UNHCR. And that is very important because it deals with the historic backlogs up until today. The last issue I would like to clarify, Chair, is that you will remember that we have long been coming here to the Portfolio Committee dealing with the issue of our capacity in terms of staff numbers. And we have always said the issue of the cap is giving us a problem in terms of us hiring more staff. So the issue of the 200 and odd something million then deals directly with that problem, which means we are now going to be able to hire the staff that we need to increase the capacity of the department, which is then separate from the issue of the 10,000, which I think probably the minister will deal with that in more detail. The issue of public works, I really think that we should let public works take responsibility for what they did, because all of that procurement for the issue of defense was a public works centered arrangement, which we really as a Department of Home Affairs much to do with it and participation in it. So I really think we just need to put a bit of pressure on public works to conclude that investigation. But all in all, the expenditure is sitting on their books. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for your comments. Minister?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity. I think a lot of questions have been answered, but I really need to clarify some of them. On the first question by Honorable Pile, let me start from the beginning, Chairperson. I was studying the middle. From the beginning, I also wish to congratulate Honorable Ruos and Honorable Mudise for the new arrivals. Should I have known about these new arrivals, I will have taken the honor, either myself or the DM, to be the one who issued the birth certificates for those babies, because you are honorable members of this house. Unfortunately, we were denied that opportunity. We hope one will come in future. But once more, congratulations for the new arrivals. Chairperson, I want to answer the first question by Honorable Pili. You know, whether we are going to be part of this Connect Africa or South Africa, sorry, not Connect Africa, SA Connect, this broad announcement which was made by President, which has been endorsed by the cabinet just a few days before the President announcement, is a very important issue for Home Affairs. I did have a special discussion with the Minister of Telecommunication and Technology. And we are in broad agreement that the department that is going to gain the most is Home Affairs more than any other department in the country, because that connectivity is to connect hospitals, police stations, schools, municipalities, Home Affairs, of all state institutions. And the minister has promised me, because I asked him specifically, for instance, on the issue of long queues, he said part of the problem that Home Affairs is experiencing, which I suspect some of you members have met, is that you get into a Home Affairs office, you find people at work, but the queue not moving, but they are working very hard. When you go to the computer, you find that it can only manage 4 people per hour because of the broadband. The broadband is very thin, and no matter how you wait there impatiently, the computer doesn't move. That's the problem that Home Affairs is faced with. And the minister promised me that because this project is going to take place over, if I'm not mistaken, 2 years, but that wherever they've passed, the broadband will be broad enough to accommodate even high volume departments like Home Affairs. Because, Chairperson, why I'm saying we're going to gain more than any other? Remember that some departments can still go ahead without these issues of broadband. I mean, I've been working in many departments. I know how work is going on there. There's no chance of teachers not teaching at schools, or police not arresting people and charging them, or hospitals not seeing patients because something happens on the broadband. But in Home Affairs, that's our core function. So we are eagerly waiting for this process, and yet we are going to be the biggest beneficiaries. The second question, Honorable Kanyile, yes. Honorable Chairperson, you're right when you said maybe you didn't understand it very well from the CFO. The issue of the 266 million to capacitate the department and the interns, and the 10,000 unemployed young people who are going to digitize our records. These are completely 2 different programs. Even though we prepared them and presented them, they were dealt differently by the presidency and treasury. The presidency, the reason that this 10,000 young people was announced by the president is because it is part of the presidential youth employment program, the presidential youth employment program, which is driven by Dr. Hosien Soramokgoba in the presidency in terms of other employment projects like infrastructure, etc. This is where that money will come from. And it's not going to be a little money, Chairperson. So there was no way Treasury will cover it with this 266 million. It's a project that needs billions, not just 266 million. The 266 million is separate. It is part of our what has been given to us as our budget, but specifically to increase capacity. And as we said, that capacity in civics and immigration, that is where we're going to concentrate. Chairperson, Honorable Kanyile again mentioned this issue of a crash of the website, which the CEO so ably outlined, but she has asked me whether I'll write a letter to her officially. Honorable Kanyile, you issued a statement about this issue on the 17th of February. Then you wrote a letter to me yesterday. I did my files, my work, until 11 o'clock last night. That's when I found your letter last night. And yes, it will be responded to in writing. That's what we usually do when people write to us. I only saw it last night, and I will definitely respond for writing in it. In writing. The issue of refugee reception centers, why they remain closed. Colleagues, I think Mr. McKay has asked this, responded to this question, but I would like to put perspective to it, Chairperson, because it comes again and again and again, and I'm learning today that it looks like there is a suspicion
that we just closed the refugee reception centers because we have got the backlog. We did not do it because of that reason. Everybody knows what happened around the whole world about the issue of COVID-19 and how what happened with the disaster. I'm very surprised. Quite a number of countries closed their borders, but there is a belief that for somehow South Africa must be isolated in opening everything, including the refugee reception centers. As I'm speaking now, Zimbabwe has not even officially opened its borders since they closed them down during their lockdown. They haven't communicated to us in any official way that their borders are open. So I'm just surprised. Why is South Africa being put under pressure about this issue of refugee reception centers when all other countries are doing exactly what you are doing as a protection against measures against COVID? Some of them are even much more, you know, stringent than we are in South Africa. But I can assure you, we did not close anything because we are dealing with the backlog. We launched a program with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, as you know, last year in February, where we were given 143 million rand to capacitate the work of dealing with the backlog. We have done so by increasing the number of lawyers in the in RASA, Refugee Appeals Authority, from 5, we increased them by 36 lawyers who are doing the work. Some of the lawyers who are helping them there, at least one of them, has worked for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugee in Geneva and understand the processes. That's what we are dealing with them. 3 weeks ago, or maybe even a month, I had a whole day meeting with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugee, the deputy commissioner responsible for protection. We discussed this issue and we agreed that we'll extend it even to people who are not appealing, but who are applying for the first time by training them and capacitating them and having more funding from the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugee. That's how we are dealing with the backlog. We are not dealing with it by closing the refugee reception centers. And I'm sure the one in Cape Town, you have also been outlining how the legal system is involved in that. It's in the hands of judges already, because we are not the ones who closed that reception center. It was closed in court long before the issue of COVID. And so the process of reopening, it is still also going on in court. The issue of contingent liability. Chairperson, you may remember yourself specifically and Honorable Ruos, because these are the two members I can remember. If I forgot the others, please forgive me. But the two members I remember, Honorable Chabane and Honorable Ruos, who accompanied the then chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Advocate Bongo, to the Department of Home Affairs to look into the legal unit and as part of that issues of contingent liability. I want to remind you that one of the things we found was that some of the contingent liability has been there for many years, because what was happening was that the people sue us and litigate against us. Many of us, believe you me, they're taking chances. Even in health, it was like that, because they know that the state attorney's office, where they lodge some of these documents, will not move, and you will find yourself having been judged in court, maybe even in absentia. That is still happening. You are aware that the Department of Justice tried to resolve that issue by opening a new office of the Solicitor General. I'm not yet as convinced that that office is saving the process, because we still have cases where we are not served with papers. You don't even know that you have been served, or you don't even know that you are in contempt of court, because the documents are in the state attorney's office. And these litigators know that very well. They just deliberately avoid the department and go to the state attorney's office or anywhere in the country and lodge their papers, knowing very well that nobody will notice. So one of the things that was happening with contingent liability is that somebody takes a chance, like a gentleman who was suing us for 400 million for delaying his documents when he came back. He's a doctor who went to work in Canada. He said when he came back, we delayed issuing him necessary documents and he lost 400 million in practice. Some of us have been in private practice. We know that's madness. But what you do is when you respond
in writing to the court. They just pull back and keep quiet. Now, the weakness in the legal unit was that they don't chase those cases. Like these two cases that the DG has reported about, we move them very hard in court and say, let this case sit. Either we lose or we win. But it must not remain on our books forever where it's just a stalemate and remain contingent liability as if we owe anybody anything. That's why you saw this new dawn technologies and new valor. That's why we saw them who were suing us for 68 million. Even the constitutional court saying they've got no case against us. But that case remained on the books for the past 8 years. And so we are looking at that. We don't want any case to remain on our books for that long. We'll deal with that. The issue of Honorable Ruas about the very good lady who served to you, congratulations, because we don't usually get our office, our front office people being praised. I'm happy that you found such a person, but that she didn't know about this issue of fathers. It's a new thing. Remember, the mainstay of giving birth certificates in Home Affairs was the mother. And whether we look at that with shame or not, but that's how Home Affairs has been working over ages, over the decades, that we want your mother, we want to know your mother and not fathers. And the reasons were very obvious. That is difficult to prove who somebody's father is, rather than proving who their mother is. Or sometimes we don't even end up knowing who the father is in some cases. And so the mainstay of Home Affairs officials was about mothers. But that has changed, but it's quite recent. Remember, there was a court case about this, that fathers have got the right to come and register their babies without even mothers participating. So many of our officials, it will take some time, but as Mr. Gama has said, we'll train them. It will take them time to get used to the idea that a father can also have that right. And I'm not trying to defend it, but I'm just saying it's something they've been practicing over decades. It's a long practice, but it will soon change. Now, Honorable Ruas, this issue of acting CEO being taken to account all the time, I think it arises every time we come to the portfolio committee that the CEO is not acting, by the way. He's now a CEO. And after appointment, I wish to remind you that you complain that we should have charged her instead of appointing her. It comes all the time. It's nothing new. I want to assure you that the report, which I'm going to talk about when I answer Honorable Chaban, will deal with this matter. Let me just leave it there. But I am not inclined to go and charge anybody when I've not been given any facts of what they are guilty of. But I do charge people and suspend them. You can come to the Department of Home Affairs. We'll give you a list of all the senior people we charge. So I'm not scared of charging people and suspending them. But I don't just do it willy-nilly because some people feel like I need to do it. No. The question of Honorable Lizelle van der Merwe, I think, has been answered about the interim, in the meantime, about the Border Management Authority. I think that was very adequate. The issue of PSA, honorable members, you were there twice. You saw how the workers act, even in front of you, and making as if somebody is not doing their work there. I have met PSA many times. Even after you were there, Honorable Chaban, I met them many times. They come with very wild allegations all the time. And one response to them, we even respond to them in writing. My last meeting with them was not even PSA, which is at Government Printing Works. They called their national executive member who came there to lead the delegation. And I gave them answers in front of him. And every time you give an answer, they come with something else. I mean, like, which worker in the world does not know that the Minister of Home Affairs and the CEO of Government Printing Works don't determine salaries? These salaries are determined centrally in negotiating chambers. And they've been explained to. This problem about them demanding that their salaries be increased was that they were promised by one of the former acting CEOs and she was promised them something on which she has got no power at all, because no CEO can promise salaries. I don't know, maybe in a meeting where they usually put senior people under pressure, whether she succumbed to pressure and promised them that their salaries will be increased. But they were informed in many meetings that that is not possible, that the promise that was given, the person who promised them, doesn't have the legal authority to promise such a thing. It's not possible in South Africa, but they keep on demanding it. Now, that I call complete unreasonableness. The question, very important question of Honorable Lowase, I'll combine it with the remarks made by Honorable Chabane, that there are people who resigned before the committee. You are aware that I've set up a committee, and I reported to this, I've set up a tribunal, and I've reported to this committee, a tribunal that was chaired by Advocate Mojang Gumbi, yes, the former advisor to President Thabo Mbeki, who later on could no longer chair the meeting, the tribunal, because she was called on to be in the committee that dealt with July unrest. But she remained a member of the committee and gave over the chairing to Mr. Malawi, a former magistrate. Now, I want to assure you, honorable members, that report will be out in 12 days' time. The reason that the report is not yet out is that I had sight of that report. It was very, very complex, especially the IT part. The most important part of this committee, which we asked them to do, is IT. You are complaining continuously of ICT in government printing works. I said they must put all their forces on ICT. What is going on in ICT? Are these accidents happening there? Or are these processes, problem of negligence? Or is it commission or omission done deliberately by particular individuals? I said they must answer those questions, and I can show you in 12 days' time, they will answer them, and I will ask Mr. Malawi, who is now chairing on behalf of Advocate Gumbi, to come to you and present the report themselves. You are not going to get it from me. But about people who resigned, yes, I want to confirm that they interviewed lots and lots of people, including the past 18 CEOs. They were all there. They were interviewed. They've got a wealth of information from them. And yes, I can confirm today that one of the main people who is the person in charge of ICT in government printing works, 2 days after he was interviewed by the committee, handed in resignation and is gone. We don't know what the committee is going to say in 12 days' time when they give the report about people who resigned and left, because it looks like it's not the only one. But I believe the law does provide for that. Now, Honorable Chabane talked about parallel processes. I just want to remind Honorable Chairperson that when you came to government printing works, this acting CEO then, because you are still acting, informed you that was giving over this this issue of stolen CVs to the Hawks, and you are waiting for them. The committee said no, but government printing works must not fold their arms. They must also do their own internal investigation and take people to DC if it's necessary. That's exactly what they've done. But the report from the Hawks, I'm also eagerly waiting for them. But they were carrying your instruction by going on to investigate and charge people by DC. If then there's any criminality, the Hawks will still take up issues, regardless of what the sanction was on the DC process. But they had to do that DC process, because the committee advised them to, or instructed them to do so. So we are waiting. The report about the chair by Honorable Lubisi, unfortunately, Honorable Lubisi has taken up by very serious health issues, and that one is still outstanding. But I'm promising the government printing works one in 12 days' time, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister, Deputy Minister, the Director General Mathode and your team for sufficiently responding to the issues that members raised. We take note of the improvements, Minister, that presented by the department, including a government printing works. We're going to minister on the issues that are outstanding, including the report that you have just reflected on of at the level of government printing works. Pay attention to that report. We'll specifically itemize government printing works. The CEO and your team will come back to the committee with the team that will be presenting on the report that have identified some of the issues that are there. We want to pay attention to recommendations that the committee have been making, decided on the that must be implemented. And want to appreciate the good work the minister that have been carried. We can assess or observe some of the improvements within the decision that have been taken. You must, Minister, carry the message of the committee through Honorable Ross to the frontline workers. And I'm sure that all workers are working hard in order to serve our people. In our last year, there was appreciation of DDG Sigama and the team for the responses that have been given by the community. We know that when there's issues that are raised by members of parliament, not only a Home Affairs Portfolio Committee, your team at the department, to the extent of responding on the issues that are being raised, complaints from the society, and want to take that appreciation. We're going to make sure that all the issues that...
Chairperson?
Yes, I will...
Sorry, Chairperson, just a point of order. I thought you might actually call the minister out on it. Chairperson, the issue of holding the acting CEO at the time, as it is stated in our report, to account, was a committee decision. So it wasn't a DA decision or the decision of one person. It was a decision by this committee to hold the acting CEO to account, and I asked what had happened. So it's incorrect to state that.
Honorable Ross, I'm sure you're aware that you are disrupting the chairperson.
Chairperson, it's a point of order.
No, the chairperson is not out of order.
It's a point of order.
To who? Because the chairperson is making a summary on the issues that have followed discussion, including the matter you're raising. I have not concluded the remark.
Yeah, so the point of order is to say that you should have held into account on that, Chair. I mean, it's a committee resolution and it hasn't been responded to.
If the minister keeps getting away with it,
what happens is the committee makes a recommendation.
No.
And then it's matter decided and it doesn't get dealt with, Chair.
No. I will not allow the meeting to degenerate. That I won't allow. I will not appreciate it because we are making...
May I be recognized?
Hold on, Honorable Kanyin. Hold on. Just hold on. I'm saying that I have not concluded my remark on the matters. And you can't raise the point of order on the chair when I have not concluded the remark. You could have raised the point of order when the minister was responding. Because it's the minister who, I think, in terms of assessment, he was out of order on the matter. That is the procedural how we deal with meetings. So if you want to raise a matter when the chairperson on the platform, you must request to raise a follow-up and clarify the matter because I'm not out of order because I'm not responding on behalf of the department. It's the minister, the DM, the Director General. So you'll be given opportunity. I'm just raising that. That's not the point of, it's not how matters are raised as a point of order. So you'll be given a matter to opportunity to raise on the follow-up. But the chair is not out of order because I'm not responding on the issues of Department of Home Affairs. I'm presiding over the meeting, which is your meeting. So we're going to follow up on the issues that you raised, Minister, and the DG, including this report that I raised it deliberately, the testing of the advisor Gumbi and the Director General Lubisi. And also I raised it deliberately on how you reconcile the issues, investigation process of government printing works because the committee have taken a decision and appreciated on you appointed. In fact, the committee that also complemented your work to appoint the task team because of the issues that are arising from the government printing works. It will be at that time when the report has been presented by the Gumbi, and whether the committee will reflect on the affirming the consequence management that must be taken by whoever was involved, including those that are in the executive of the government printing work. So we can't preempt the report at this level of the outcome, and we'll make sure that at all times the committee, their recommendations and decisions must be implemented. That is the collective view of this committee. That is how we're going to deal with this matter. And I'm going to give a benefit of doubt on the matter raised by Honorable Ross. And he must, from now on, understand how function of the meeting are run and the raising of point of order, follow-up, or clarity. So I'm inviting you to do follow-up on the matter you've been raising, Honorable Ross. No, Ross?
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I apologize. I just had the impression you were stepping off the item at that point. So apology from my side. I think the point is that it's a committee resolutions, and these need to be taken seriously by the executive because they are resolutions and they need to be answered properly. They cannot be battered away and turned into a personal thing. So we need a proper answer to that, because it was a committee resolution that the CEO be held to account. And the question was, in what way has that been done?
Okay, it has been noted. Minister, can I give it another opportunity?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, in my understanding of calling a person to account, it is about the issues that took place there in government printing works. And the CEO has actually given you an account today of every step that she has taken. But the biggest one will come when this tribunal was set up. When you said you must take people to account, you don't just jump and say, I'm taking you to account for this and that. You go deep, you dive deep and find out what has happened. And I'm telling you today here that in 12 days' time, that report will come. If it found the CEO guilty for anything, they will say so. And I'll take action about that particular issue. If they find any other person guilty of anything, they will say so. If they say we refer the matter for criminal investigation, that will happen. So you are right, Chairperson. I'm not out of order on any issue. You are right that somebody is jumping the gun here. They must hold their horses and wait, and it's then that they can talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you. One of the principles we must always understand is that contributions of members to the issues raised by either department or the stakeholders involved. And our summary of decision for implementation is collective. And secondly, in the manner the department raised issues to us as committee members, we must take counsel to appreciate process and implementation phases. So I'm trying to say that the issues that are directed, Honorable Ross, just wanted to avoid your line that this matter is becoming personal on the responses from the minister or yourself to the minister. I just want to try to suppress that view. And I think we adequately understand that the tribunal which we have initiated take account all executive of the government printing works, and including the CEO staff members. And I think we'll await for that report, and it will be reported to the committee, and the committee will take a recommendation to that effect. We're not going to leave anything for that is not going to be implemented. We're going to marshal as a collective to make sure that decision of the committee, our oversight work is collective, and we resonate within that framework. Thanks, honorable members. Thanks on this item, the minister, the CEO, and the team for presenting. We'll follow up on the issues, and I think we'll be able to take action, and yourself as the as the team. And you remember that there are some of the issues, once the report comes, we have to refer them to SCOPA to do also work in terms of the legislation that we're presiding over. We're going to now step off of the item and invite Mr. Adams to deal with the analysis of the SONA, and then also with the matter of the report that we have resolved on it last week. Just a brief, Ms. Adams.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, can I just confirm that the document is displayed in front of you?
Yes, yes, Ms. Adams.
Thank you, Chairperson. So we had identified six key highlights from the State of the Nation address that relate to Home Affairs. And there were two specific ones mentioning Home Affairs directly, which hasn't occurred in many years that there's such specific reference of the department in the State of the Nation address specifically. So the Home Department of Home Affairs, I think, came playing an increasingly important role in the development and the state of the country. At least from the SONA perspective. So the main highlights there were the attracting skilled immigrants for encouraging and a thriving economy. And then secondly, stimulating employment, including DHA interns that are going to be recruited for digitizing paper records, which made mention to today in the minister's response. In addition, the following matters have been repeated from previous years, which relate to government departments more generally, and that's continuing work against standing against corruption. Then the massive rollout of infrastructure, including broadband internet, which again we made reference to today, and then the Presidential State-Owned Enterprise Council and its possible relation to the GPW, and then lastly, strengthening democracy and reaffirming commitment to the Constitution. So in terms of attracting the skilled immigrants for a thriving economy, the specific mention was made to the possible expansion of different visa options and also trying to encourage tourism businesses at work, to which the department has already indicated its expansion of the e-visa system to several countries. And there has been in the past 10 years more emphasis on security rather than on encouraging migration and promoting tourism because of growing security concerns around the world. So, and we can see this also in the Border Management Act, so where there's a strong emphasis on coordinating with the security departments, but then the possible negative effects of that can be that there's sometimes the good, so-called good migration, encouraging tourism, encouraging investment, encouraging skilled migrants to come in can often be made as a second priority. So in terms of countering the over-concern on security, there has been a revised critical skills list, which has indicated, new kind of areas of skill. Some of these new critical skills on the revised list include directors of enterprise, corporate general managers, program or project managers, quality assurance managers, and data scientists. And so what will be needed now that these scarce skills have been publicized is that there also need to be technical guidelines published so that these potential candidates or these potential applicants can know exactly what it is that's required of them if they want to apply, and also to have these as possible avenues for application in the VFS or the online visa application system. In addition to that, the president mentioned the possibility of exploring startup visas and remote working visas, which a lot of countries around the world have started introducing, just in line with the new nature of work in the modern economy, trying to encourage people to come and work here for prolonged periods of time when they're already being paid elsewhere, so they can stimulate the economy. We are competing with many other countries in the world, and so we are on the defensive. We actually need to see if we can push these kinds of changes as quickly as possible. But they will, in fact, require probably changes to the Immigration Act if we can't bring them through the regulation changes. In addition, the president also mentioned the removing of red tape in government departments in general. And so perhaps this focus on government in general, in terms of like removing red tape and admin, can also assist the department in removing some of the administrative burdens that continue to be experienced and delays that continue to be experienced in applications, as also been raised by some of the members in the meeting today. And then the digitizing of records, I think the minister already went into quite some detail about this today, but these 10,000 interns, it's a massive project because there's a significant amount of backdated or non-digitized documents, which are kind of creating big risk to both security and also to the efficiency of the government department. So this is a well appreciated and long overdue intervention, which will improve all services of the department, from like births, deaths, marriages, and then also internal, eventually also the visas related to like relatives and marriage type visas, because all those backdated records will then become digital and searchable and prevent the risk of losing such documents. So we'll make sure that we include the progress on this project in the committee timeline, the committee schedule going forward. And then the continuing work against standing against corruption. The significant work done by this committee in the last parliament investigating state capture, and this was fed into the Zondo Commission, which has released two of its reports. And I think the last one will then probably include reference to the work done by our committee specifically. I believe being released at the end of the month. So we'll follow up and make sure that anything that relates to our committee and our recommendations relating to state capture will be investigated, along with inviting the Counter-Corruption Unit to report to us again, as they have already been doing intermittently in our meetings so far. But we'll include that on our agenda as well. Again, the massive rollout of infrastructure, including broadband. So again, was made mention of today. And hopefully this rollout of infrastructure can also affect the ability of the DHA to procure more offices, as well as to update their current offices. So it's monitoring their interaction with the residential level infrastructure project and making sure that we can see that there's some kind of benefit for the modernizing of Home Affairs offices and expansion of its footprint. In addition, the president also mentioned particularly seaports and the importance of them to the development of the economy, and the DHA's capacity and infrastructure at ports has also been limited to some extent, and perhaps also with the rollout of the BMA and increased infrastructure that's already being implemented at Cape Town, additional services such as these can be rolled out to other ports, particularly Durban and Bura container terminals, where the processing of officials for the processing of goods is more speedily contested, and also preventing the unwanted migration coming into the country. That said, it's a long-term project with the rollout of the BMA capacity at the ports of entry, particularly the seaports. So this will have to be as an ongoing oversight area for the committee as we go forward, and we'll also include these in our potential oversight visits. Next, the president mentioned the state-owned enterprise council, and though the GPW isn't formally a state-owned enterprise, it is not, nonetheless, a profit-making entity. And so hopefully there will be some benefit of the centralized shareholder model proposed by the president in terms of state-owned entities, so that there's a better separation of the state's ownership functions from its policy-making and regulatory functions, which will could potentially benefit some of the management infrastructure and financial auditing challenges at the GPW. Also, depending also on the outcomes that come from this internal investigation at the GPW. So it was just a suggestion there to see if we can tie in these national level reconsiderations or revaluations of state-owned enterprises such that they can benefit the GPW too. And we'll keep ongoing insight on that. And then lastly, also relating to the latest schedules of our committee today and last week, the president's reaffirmation to strengthen democracy and on the constitution is supported by the work of this committee and its electoral legislation amendments in line with the Constitutional Court ruling, and we just bear in mind that this is one of the committee's overarching commitments is ready to strengthen democracy and commitment to the constitution, as well as also ensuring that the department continues its improvement of enabling documents to allow more active participation in elections by all citizens in the country. So that's just a brief overview of some of the key issues raised in the State of the Nation address to assist us going forward in our planning, also perhaps in the member states in the House. Thank you, Jefferson.
No, thanks, Mr. Adams and the research team for the good work analyzing the SONA and the debate that has flown in. And I'm sure that also the members of parliament debated on the issues which reflected on the work of Home Affairs, Government Printing Works, and the IC. Thank you very much for that. In your the report, you need to change a line there so that it doesn't stay. I see you are saying former DG of Home Affairs, Mr. Mavuso. You mean to change, I think Mr. Mavuso has portfolio is heading there. Otherwise, you'll be compelled to put many acting DGs in the report. So just so that we don't get confused on the status of Mr. Mavuso when the report, your analysis being documented. Members, I think this is an analysis from SONA for noting. And if members need to interface with it, but is for assisting us on the issues that were raised by SONA. And I think out of this discussion of the BRRR discussions, some of the issues have been highlighted and clarified. I do not take advantage that is for noting because members still use it to follow up on our work and also use on the debate notes. Can I establish if there's comment on that, members? And then I'll start with Honorable Pile. Honorable Pile? Honorable Ross?
Thank you, Chair. I'll be fairly brief. And Chair, I'm glad that the Minister quoted the Bible in his SONA response. The verse I have for the Minister is Matthew 3, verse 8. And it says, produce fruit that is fitting of your repentance. And what this means is, do something to show that you've really given up your sins. And I think the big thing here, again, in the SONA is the issue of the e-visa. I think it's the fourth time that President Ramaphosa has mentioned the e-visa, the urgency of it. So really just a few quick questions in terms of, is this e-visa going to be operational by March, as was indicated late last year? Is the central adjudication hub established? Is it ready to go? Does this impact the contract of VFS? Because my understanding is then clients would be able to apply directly on this e-visa system. How would it affect that contract? And remote working visas are quite interesting. So what are the thoughts at this stage on the structure of these visas and the implementation or the estimated implementation timeframe of them? AJ.
Thank you. I did not get the preamble. If it was part of SONA, maybe you will assist me. I do not get into issues which are not framed by SONA, and I request members to respond to that. Is my understanding that the frame is part of the analysis, Honorable Ross?
Chair, when the minister's response to SONA, then he quoted a Bible verse.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. No.
Responding with the Bible verse of a recommendation.
Yeah. No. I think the minister also tell us about the background. Yeah. Honorable Mulegwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome the report on or the research on SONA. I would like to encourage the department to draw action plan for implementation of those issues raised in the SONA. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks very much. Honorable Kanyele.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have been covered by my colleagues that have spoken before me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm also covered, Chair. I think that, like you said, that we will make notes and then we will give our speech during the response on the BRRR. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Khosa.
No, I am covered for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Pile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. No, we appreciate the analysis of SONA, and I think it's important for members to reflect. And perhaps at some point we can be able to engage and give some recommendations. But Chair, before I just say thank you, I just want to reiterate the importance of respecting the chairperson of our committee and meeting and following meeting procedure. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Play. Co-Chair, Honorable Van der Merwe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the report is for noting, and I thank our researchers and team for putting it together. I think the remote working visa for me is something that is quite exciting because, as Mr. Salmon said, other countries are implementing it. But also when we do address the issues of immigration at one point, when we have that discussion, which is on our agenda, I would like us to look closer at the critical skills list. I would, for example, want to know how did we determine specifically these skills gaps, and are they matched specifically to gaps in the economy, for example? I know the list contains, for example, jobs such as political commentators, that is considered a critical skill. Yet we've got many political commentators in the country. I'm not going to go deeper into it, but I think it's something that we still need to discuss further at a later stage. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you for your contributions. I'm now inviting the DM and the Minister, Deputy Minister.
No, thanks, Chair. I think the report is quite clear and straightforward. All that we have to do now is to take some of the items coming from SONA and make them into a program for implementation this year. I think that is what we're responsible for. Thank you.
Thank you, DM Minister.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Maybe just to take this opportunity to explain the issue of e-visa. You are aware that the e-visa system has been, we have actually tried it for the first time in a form of a pilot in Kenya. From there, we extended to the three biggest populations in the world. That's China, India, and Nigeria. The three of them form one third of the world population. We also extended to there. Then from there, it went over to 14 different countries, which requires visas. Usually when I listen to people talking about this e-visa, they tend to forget that this e-visa can only go to countries that require visas. For instance, the whole of Western Europe does not need a visa to come to South Africa. The whole of Western Europe, the whole of North America does not need a visa to come to South Africa. And if I'm not mistaken, yes, the whole of North America too. So the whole of SADC, they don't need any visa to come to South Africa. So the e-visa is not going to apply to them. It is not changing anything. Because they come and go. For instance, in SADC, every human being living within a SADC country has got 90 days to visit South Africa, 90 days per annum as part of this free visa. So please take into consideration, when we say e-visa, we are talking about countries who have to apply when they come to South Africa. And we've already completed the big ones, but we were largely disturbed by COVID because piloting e-visa, you have to take people to go and sit in that country. And many of the countries, as you know, close their borders when the pilot has started, and that's what delayed it. But please do remember that there are many, many other countries, especially the ones that are good, important for as a tourist partners, who don't need visas to visit South Africa altogether. Now, the issue of the remote working visa, yes. You are aware that one of the announcements by the president is that he has appointed somebody in the office of the president to review the whole visa system, and that we are waiting for the president, including this whole issue of working at home and all that. And that's not in Home Affairs, but it's within the presidency, and we'll be waiting. Now, the issue of critical skills.
Mr. Adams, I don't know why you continue to disrupt your meeting. I mean, you have presented, members are commenting, you are disrupting. I don't think it's fair for honorable members and it's fair for participants.
Beg your pardon, sir.
Yeah. The issue of critical skills, I'm happy that Honorable Van der Merwe raised it because I discovered how ill understood it is, and I'm not saying by this committee, generally. Yesterday, I had a 45-minute interview with 702, Radio 702, where it was very clear the person was interviewing me have got their own impression what an e-visa system is. Questions like it's coming to block jobs for foreign nationals, or is going to favor foreign nationals in giving them jobs, which South Africans can easily do, etc., etc. And maybe it will be important for me to explain. The issue of critical skills visa is not something we have some suck now that the economy has got problems or now that there are discussions about migration. The issue of critical skills list is in terms of Section 19.4 of the Immigration Act 18 of 2002. And as a general practice, every 4 years, critical skills must be reviewed every 4 years. And the review process is not just adding occupations there and skills. It's quite involving. Now, unfortunately, the last time we released this critical skills list was in 2014. it took a very long time because while in terms of the law, it appears in the Immigration Act and in terms of the law, it's the Minister of Home Affairs who must publicize it. But it's not really done by Home Affairs because it's an impossible task for us. We don't have the skill and the capacity to do that. So what we do, we approach the Department of Higher Education and Training. And this time around, through the Labor Market Intelligence Research Program and DNA Economics, they were engaged on this issue of critical skills, and departments like trade industry and competition, public enterprises, basic education, small business, et cetera, Department of Labor and Employment, all of them, tourism, health, all of them had inputs in this because we asked them in their area of work, what is that which they need? We even got 363 public comments from members of the public. From there, an extensive NETLEC process ensued. And you are aware that in NETLEC, when you say you are consulting NETLEC, you are basically consulting business, big business for that matter. You are consulting labor unions, not one union, all the labor union movement together. You are consulting the state and you are consulting community. And it spent a very long time there at NETLEC. And when we finished it, we sent it to the president project office. And it's only then that we gazetted it. And then the 101 occupations that are there are the results of part of this process, not just the minister Samsagi. And the other thing I want to explain, after it was released, I had lots of people complaining, especially in the health center, where doctors were saying we're undermining them because they are not on the critical skills list. The critical skills list has got nothing to do with the importance of your profession. Judges are extremely important in the country, but they'll never appear there. Actually, during the process of putting up this list, the legal profession was up in arms, wishing that we must put law there as a critical skills list. It's not that law is not important, but it's not a critical skill because we have got enough lawyers in the country. We don't need any more from anybody. So a critical skill is about a skill that is needed in the country for the economy, but it's in short supply in the country. It's not about the importance of the status of that particular profession. It's about whether we have got enough or we don't, and that's why we had to include the market research intelligence to look into those issues. Now, we are still receiving inputs from people who are still saying, no, you did not add this. No, this qualification is too high. We are dealing with them individually. But the last thing I want to say, Chairperson, it does not mean people who have got skills, very highly needed skills, will come only through critical skills list. No. There are other avenues. For instance, for the past decade, very highly rated medical and nursing specialists did not come into South Africa through critical skills list. They come through a general work visa, which is in terms of Section 19 of the Act. Some come through business visas. Some come through corporate visas, which is Section 29 of the Act. So there are many other ways. And there's a reason why we have done that, because certain skills are so important that we'll deal with them separately via some of these sections. And it has been working like that over the ages. And we did not see any reason why we should sort of change it. Thank you, Chairperson. I think it might be important for the committee to ask us to come and brief them, because Honorable Van der Merwe mentioned something about political commentator. I'm trying to check what number is it on the 101 occupation, Honorable Van der Merwe, if you could help me. I don't seem to remember it. There are numbers from 1 to 101. If you could just easily say number what, because when people write to us, they actually quote the number, and it's very easy to find it. I've got here in front of me, but I can't easily check that political commentator that is being mentioned. Please, okay. If you can help me.
Okay. Thanks, Minister, and honorable members, for making comment on this presentation. Thanks very much again, Mr. Adams, for the analysis. Let's note it. We'll utilize and track the issues the president has raised, and the committee will time to time follow up on the progress for implementation on the issue. So I'm going to step off this item. The next item is around the last week we dealt with the issue of the private members bill of Honorable Lukota, and all of us, we resolved to appreciate his initiative to the process, and we reflected to now focus on the executive bill that was tabled in Parliament and referred to the committee. You have also adopted the roadmap for public hearing. And I'll request the team, Mr. Adams or Mr. Matonsi, just to do the brief report of the minutes raised last week. Then we formally deal with this matter. And then we end the meeting. I'm going to request Mr. Adams again or Mr. Matonsi. I think he will guide us on the process. If there's a legal team with us, will also be given opportunity if they want to comment on the process. But we have sufficiently dealt with the matter in our last committee meeting, and the sponsor also confirmed through the PC secretary that there's no comment on the issues. Mr. Matonsi or Mr. Adams?
Good day, Chairperson. Yes, I'll take us through the report and our draft version of desirability. Can I confirm whether the document is displayed?
Yes, Ms. Adams, you can proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. To not take too much time for the members, we've just drafted a report indicating a history of the submission of this bill in the first couple of paragraphs, just to indicate that the bill in part arose out of the Constitutional Court ruling, and that Honorable Lukota then introduced the bill sometime after that, and that in an attempt to address the New Nation Movement court ruling, in addition to a number of other changes, including introducing constituencies and an open disproportional system. The committee received a briefing on this bill on the 9th of February 2021, and subsequent to this, it engaged in a number of activities, including the committee conducting a workshop on electoral reform, and the ministerial advisory committee being established by the Department of Home Affairs and the ministry to investigate this the electoral reform, which made the two recommendations. Option one being a slightly modified constituency, and the second being a mixed member model incorporating single member constituencies. And after considering these recommendations, the executive then introduced the bill on 10 January this year. As the members are aware, we are now engaging on the executive bill, and the submissions have been received. Closing date being yesterday, and then the detailed briefing we received on 8th of February, including engagements and inputs by the minister on the private members bill of sponsored by Honorable Lukota. In his input, the minister presented on the similarities and also the differences in the private members bill and the executive bill. The minister particularly highlighted the executive bill targets the constitutional problems raised in the New Nation Movement case. And it does so in a precise and minimalist way, only making changes that are necessary to accommodate independent candidates. While the private members bill is more general, the electoral reform proposing constituencies and an open list system. Furthermore, it is explained that the private members bill would create additional administrative tasks for the IEC, namely splitting the country into constituencies and requiring them to register independent candidates, as well as requiring them to register with the commission first, which tasks are not required in terms of the executive bill. The differences in the manner in which the seats will be filled and allocated as contained in the two bills is also presented. The minister indicated that the private members bill might not be possible to pass and implement in time for the 2024 elections, given the vast amount of work that would have to be done. Then on the 15th of February last week, the committee deliberated and considered the private members bill in light of the briefings it had proposed previously received, as well as input made by the minister on the 8th of February. At this meeting, the committee also was informed that Honorable Lekota agreed with the comments made by the minister on the private members bill and hence had no further input to make. The committee then decided that it would not proceed with the private members bill as introduced by Honorable Lekota, in part because of the far broader wide-rating substantive changes it introduced and the fact that these would not likely be passed and implemented in time for the 2024 elections. The committee wishes to thank Honorable Lekota for proposing and introducing the private members bill. Although the committee will not proceed with the private members bill, some of the issues raised in the private members bill could quite well find expression in the executive bill following consideration of public submissions, the public participation process and hearings, and the committee deliberations. And then the report can be considered, and we need a mover and a seconder, but we can first go to the mover and to the motion of desirability, and then we'll call for a move in seconder once we've done the motion of desirability, which is basically just a summary of what I've now just presented. So let me stop sharing this document, share the MOD with your permission, Chairperson.
Yes, proceed.
So again, this just indicates here it is the opinion of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, the Electoral Law Second Amendment Bill proposed by Honorable Lekota is not desirable legislation to amend the Electoral Act and the Electoral Commission Act. And this then summarizes the contents of the Lekota bill. So I'm not going to go into details there, but essentially it's all the additional matters that the Lekota and Honorable Lekota is proposing to introduce in addition to the inclusion of independent candidates, amongst which is providing for electoral technology committee and as well as providing a list of candidates must be submitted by registered party to contest an election. Must be accompanied by a personal manifesto, and also introducing an open list system, as I mentioned in the report. And then these substantive far-reaching changes and additional administrative tasks might not likely be passed and implemented in time for the 2024 national and provincial elections. So essentially that's the reason for calling for the motion of non-desirability. So, Chairperson, if then I can hand over to you in terms of requesting a mover and a seconder for both the report and the MOD. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Thanks very much for tabling the presentation to members on the guidance we've received in our deliberation in our last portfolio committee meeting. I'm going to invite members to for purpose of approving the report by the portfolio committee. Can I invite Honorable Pile?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I want to move to adopt this report and approve it. And I think we've spent a lot of time on this. We need to get tracking. Thank you.
Mover for seconder to the report.
Lekwa says second the report, Chair.
Any contrary view to the report? None. Thanks, members. The The report has been approved by the committee as per your deliberation, informed by deliberation last week. We, as the collective, have resolved that we... Okay, Mr. Adams?
Sorry to be technical, Chairperson, but we just need a mover and a seconder for both the report and the motion of desirability.
So okay, can I call the... Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Adams, for the guidance. I thought it's for both. Can we invite hands for motion of desirability? Mover for the adoption?
Honorable? Yeah, Chairperson, I was giving others a chance, but since none of the members are speaking, I'll move for that.
Thank you. Second to the mover.
I will second.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mulekwa.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I move for the second the report.
Thank you. Second, any contrary view? Thank you. Now that we've approved all the two, one, the report and the motion of desirability, members, we have a approved program of action for public approach the Constitutional Court for extension. And we want to thank all members, and also as we have agreed that we must invite and extend and call for members of the public, the NGOs, and interested parties to form part of this public hearings, because it's quite important. Honorable Lizelle, in the last meeting, that we need to extend this public hearing so that we get guidance from our people and all stakeholders. So we're going to interface with this process and make sure that we adequately get a sufficient input on the proposed options that have been raised by the executive, the work that has been done, and other options that members of the public will contribute. And I think that will give us an opportunity to broaden clarity on this process. Is there any other matter, Mr. Matonsi, that we need announcement on? And then we're skipping off this item.
Okay, Chair, the matter that I have to announce is on our legislative program that yesterday it was a closing date to receive submissions on the bill. And then next week, that is the first, and the second, we are planning a public hearing. I'll call them like a national public hearing. Then it will be on Zoom. We have got a substantial number of submissions that we have received. This is beside the provincial public hearing, Chair. So that's all for the 1st and the 2nd of March.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matonsi. I will request you to also update members in terms of the process that we're going to interact with, so that before that time, all of us were pressed on the process of the issues. And thanks for, and also it will be important to indicate public submissions you've received in our next meeting, so that we're also working closely with this process, including the meeting that you have referred to, and also the public hearing. It's going to be an intense work, and also request you appreciate the work of the parliamentary legal team and the research team of the portfolio committee for the work that you are continuously doing. And I think we'll also compliment the members of the portfolio committee. Thanks very much, colleagues. Thanks very much, honorable members. Thanks very much, Minister and the team. The three items we've exhausted in our agenda, and the announcement has been carried. Unless there's another announcement that need to be made.
No, there's no other announcement.
Okay. Thank you. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair.